It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, a very special episode, our very first episode from our new East Side studio. We hope you like the new place. And breaking it in, my favorite people, our local show hosts, Jason Howell and Megan Maroney and Father Robert Ballasaire and Alex Lindsay. It's going to be a really special TWiT. Next, stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 576, recorded Sunday, August 21st, 2016. Hello, Eastside. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. And by Harry's, for guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Go to harrys.com/twit and get $5 off your first order. And by Automatic, the small adapter that turns your clunker into a smarter connected car. For more information on Automatic's brand new Automatic Pro adapter, visit automatic.com/twit and enter the limited time offer code TWIT for $20 off their new device. And by Braintree. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one easy integration. Learn more at braintreepayments.com/twit.
There is nothing wrong with your TWiT. Do not attempt to close this browser. We are controlling the stream. We control the video. We control the audio. You are about to participate in a new online adventure. You are about to experience the sights and sounds of the new TWiT Studio. Please stand by. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And the champagne popped a little bit early.
This is TWiT.
And we welcome you to the TWiT Eastside Studio, still in beautiful downtown Petaluma. Hello, everybody. Our brand new studio is online and on the air, and we are celebrating with champagne. Alex Lindsay, can I pour you a little glass?
Yes, please.
We brought all in-studio hosts today, all of our staff hosts. There is Jason Howell from
Fantastic.
TNT.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Father Robert Ballasaire, are you allowed a little champagne once in a while?
If I drink from both hands at the same
time. Just for a good time. Call Father Robert and also Megan Maroney. And I thought it'd be fun to start this new episode in our life with our hosts, the people who come in every day and work so hard, formerly at the Brick House Studios, now here in our new studios. And it's a little rough if you're just tuning in. I got to tell you, it's, you know, the engineers were up all night. They've been up for several days, frankly, many of them, wiring and moving stuff over because I was mean. I was cruel. I said, I don't want to miss any shows. I want to go as best we can, as we did the last time, from broadcasting at the Brick House to here at the Eastside Studios. And you know what? To their credit, they made it happen. So a tip of the hat, John Slanina, to Alex Gumpel, to Russell Tammany, to our engineering director, Bruce Chesham, to you, Patrick Delahanty, to all the people who work so hard behind the scenes to make this possible. Let's toast the new Brick House. Sorry, Eastside Studios. Cheers.
Cheers, Leo.
All right. So if you're watching, and I know most of you listen, so if you're listening, you probably don't notice any difference, right? It looks the same to you.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know what they're talking about.
The dark red at the back of your eyelids are exactly the same. But for those of you watching on video, there's a little bit of a difference. We brought the gear with us. We brought the wall with us. We brought the little thing behind us. We have a new table. This table, they promised me, is impervious to any kind of abuse that we might give it.
I find that to be optimistic.
That you have all of the audio controls for all of our microphones
at my feet,
right underneath where you're sitting.
Just what you wanted.
Just probably
be careful.
Not there permanent.
It's cool. A lot of power.
Probably not their permanent, permanent place. Hey, I also should thank, if I want to go home tonight, my wife, Lisa Laporte, our CEO, the person who really made this all happen, who was the project director. And you should get some champagne, too. Woo! Without Lisa, we couldn't pay the bills. We wouldn't have this beautiful studio. She found it for us. She managed the build-out. And thank you, Lisa, for doing such a great job. And thank you to everybody here in studio. They've got a huge studio audience today. Some familiar faces, some new faces. Welcome to all of you to Petaluma. What do you think? You like it? Yeah. We survived. No, I don't think we lost anybody in the process. We are streaming this for the first time ever in 360 surround, thanks to you, Alex Lindsay. Tell us about that.
So we're using one of the Nokia Ozos. Now, we did this with MacBreak a couple months ago, and it was like it took like a week to render it.
You could record it, and then you had to process it for a week before you get 15 minutes.
Yeah, it was like an hour there. But so now we have some dedicated servers that are actually able to stitch everything live. It's capable of stereo 4K. We're doing mono right now. I tweeted out, and I think also in the forums, we've got the links to both the YouTube.
Which is youtube.com/twit, I think.
Yeah, I think it's in the channel there.
Twit Network channel. So if that's the one to use, it's a little lower quality, but that's the one to use if you are using Cardboard or Gear VR.
Exactly. So that one is at 1440p, and then the one at the PixelCore site, and it is PixelCore. PixelCore.com, PXC-Live-2. But if you go to PixelCore, you'll just see 360 there.
Okay.
So just go to PixelCore.com, and I also tweeted those out, and so you can find them there. But anyway, so it's 360 live. It's kind of the next thing, we think.
It's kind of fun.
It is. People seem to be enjoying it.
There's the Ozo right there.
You get kind of a whole behind-the-scenes view of it. And this is really, in our opinion, I mean, there's a lot of 360 cameras. For live specifically, we think this is probably the best.
How much?
It's gone down. It's gone down.
Nice to know that at the very top.
There's no.
Put it this way. It costs more than this entire studio.
No. It's these cameras are now $45,000 a piece.
Dollars?
To do it. 45. Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. So
now you know why at MacBreak Weekly we've invented a unit of currency called the Alex, which is $700.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it makes everything sound a little bit more reasonable.
It is.
You know, it's only 1,000 Alexes.
Yeah, it's like 70 Alexes.
Yeah.
It's not really that bad.
We interviewed Alex at NAB for this. One of the features I love about this, and no one else is doing this, is the fact that it uses multiple microphones. Because it's when you're thinking a 360 immersive experience, it's not just what you see, it's what you hear. And with the microphones pointing in different directions, they can actually capture that.
Yeah, and this one's got eight mics on it. And
so if you're watching with a visor, as you turn your head to look at something to your left, the sound will move with that? Or
on the Nokia platform right now, it will. Other people have to adopt it into the players. So it's not adopted into the YouTube player or into the StreamShark player that we're using on this one. But we're working with folks as they start to adopt those. But that's going to be one of the next things for VR is really the audio, because when you hear it all around you, it's impressive. You know, it really changes how like the 360 gets you most of the way there. And it turns out that sound is probably more important than even stereo as far as pulling you into that scene. So it's a work in progress.
That's not a surprise at all to me. I mean, it's always been clear that audio is really important.
As soon as you have surround audio, you immediately just lock in. Yeah, I mean, it just pulls you right into where you're at.
It's, so many of your cues just in reality in general come from the auditory sense.
Yeah. Right.
That makes
perfect. And it creates a whole new set of problems. Like at NAB, we were cutting between three different cameras live. And then how do you change the sound?
You had three of those Ozos?
Yeah, we have three of those Ozos, actually.
That's 45.
They had a trailer that did nothing but house the servers needed to process everything.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of and that's processed in real time.
Yeah.
The real-time processing right now takes two GPUs that are fully in a pretty beefy machine that unwraps each camera. And then once we get it, it's just a 4K it's basically a Mercator projection or a rectilinear equilinear projection, but the Anyway, so then we just edit it in a Blackmagic switcher and add graphics and
nice.
All the other stuff. It's easy. But yeah, jumping from one surround sound mix to another turned out to be more complicated than.
We'll get a. I think the Samsung 360 is about $350. That's what we're going to get.
He's got one.
I think we have one of those too. They're
this is more in our price range.
I think that's what we're going to
get. This is what we could get.
You know, our price range fits in a little tote.
Yeah. But it gets you like 80% of the way. It's good enough.
Actually,
you
audience members,
you could stream live with that.
Reach under your seats. You get 360.
No,
stop
it. Stop it. I mean, I use the Theta S, and you showed me, Alex, how to do that live, stream live with that.
Yep.
And this streams live as well, but you have to have a Samsung phone to stream to.
You need to stream through the Samsung phone. It'll record. We have one of the.
It'll record, but then if you want to do live, see, live is really of the most interest to me.
Right. It's and the big thing for us, you know, again, the more industrial version, which is the Ozo, because it just uses an HDSDI feed, we are able to. I can literally put it over a fiber network, so I can have the camera sitting in New York and be streaming out of DC. That's the hard part with the smaller.
Jason, the Ozo's laughing at your camera.
I know. He's totally mocking it right now. It's like two.
But the reality is,
seriously?
I mean, the reality is this is where it's going. I mean, these little cameras.
Yeah, this is the future.
I mean, this is in the next 5 years, we're going to have little cameras that are doing these little.
So in a small form factor like this, how do you work in stereo?
You don't.
Stereo view.
There's no stereo. Like that's the hard. What's really hard about streaming is right now is stereo and sound. Getting good stereo and good sound.
Stereo. You mean stereo vision?
Yeah. So you're actually getting the
3D depth.
Yeah. You're basically getting the 3D
as opposed to 360 degree looking around. You're also getting 3D information, depth information.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that does not do that, but the Ozo
does do that. This is flat.
Yeah, and the Ozo, while we're only streaming right now in mono.
I don't know if I can handle 3D.
It's actually.
Next future.
I think I'm going to IRP up. It's bad enough to do 360.
Well, if you actually look at it, it does. Like, there's a couple shots from one of the political conventions recently. If you go up and take a look, we had one on us, there was one on a stage. And when you look down over the stage, you literally, your whole stomach just pulls up because it's just like, you know, like you're because the pole had to be right off the stage, right on the stage. And so it definitely, you start really feeling like you're part of that environment. So it's, you know, the three best cameras for stereo right now are the Jump, you know, the GoPro / Google Jump camera, the Facebook camera. And this camera are probably the three best stereo cameras, except the only one that does live currently is this one.
Really?
Ones. Yeah. So
this is Nokia, right?
Nokia, yeah.
Wow. I don't even know why they bothered.
I just the NAB demonstration had is like a circ troop, a semi circ troop, maybe off circ.
Right.
And it was beautiful. You could see everything from the trailer, and at the same time, I'm thinking these people need more clothes.
It's a little too intimate.
Oh well, I mean, it was outside. It was Las Vegas, so it was ridiculously hot, and you had these performers trying to do these intricate moves, sweating through every piece of
equipment
they had.
Sometimes you don't want
a 360.
Yeah, don't worry. That will not happen here. Yeah.
Well,
I'm thinking of the 360 for us more as a spy cam, not so much as a broadcast medium, because it's not what we do. As somebody said this in the chat room, I don't need 360 degrees. You just want to hear your voices and what you're talking about.
We're basically 1D.
Yeah, we should be 1D.
Yeah, we're audio.
Well, I think that, you know, and this is a good start as far as playing around with it. What we're playing with is actually bringing it a little bit closer. So setting it, for instance, like right on the other side of the table, so someone would be able to feel like they were literally sitting at the table with us.
Yeah, the sixth person at the table.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of where
we think. But like a person with a muffler, you know, they can't talk,
but it's
like Megan, they just sit there silently. That's what, no, I'm sorry, that's mean.
Oh,
I shouldn't say that.
No.
Speak, Megan. Speak. You have nothing to add to this.
Well,
okay.
No, I was thinking this is just one more thing that will keep us all inside our houses. We won't have to go anywhere. We have so much room for a studio audience. We want people to come here and not just feel like they're here. Like me. Well,
yeah, but not everybody can get here. I mean, I think it's good to have both, right? I mean, we do like having people come in. It's nice we have more room than we had before. I think it's probably a little bit more comfortable for people than it was in the old place. It was a little...
Certainly provides a better view for everybody,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
not having a,
but we
a
also designed this
in the center of the room.
It's related because we designed this not only to be better for an audience, but better for a 360 view, right? Because that means the studio is around you completely with no obstructions. That's good for the audience and it's good for a 360 camera. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks to Ryan Marsh, by the way, for lighting this and getting all the rigging up and helping design the look and feel of the studio. We've got a lot more to do. The wall behind you, Robert, is just right now just plywood, but it will be brick.
It's a beautiful plywood.
It'll be a lot of brick. I see we've saved the clock. Your set, Megan, is right where, kind of almost where you're sitting. That's where TNT is going to be, is right behind you there. We'll rotate this table around. So, yeah, this is going to be. And then when we do iOS today, we're going to be doing it over in our new living room set, which is over there with all the champagne on the table.
Yes. I was going to say, is that going to be there every day? It's like, hey, here we go.
Some days I need it.
And we put a little cot behind the wall, so during iOS today, you might see Burke wake up. And
that was actually the biggest challenge, is where are we going to let Burke sleep? There isn't a basement.
Well, it is a raised floor.
So. I only have one word. Hammock. It's all about
hammock. You can't quite fit behind that wall. It's pretty, as skinny as Burke is, it's still pretty narrow. You're going to be busy tomorrow, I think, on TNT, and Jason on All About Android, because rumor mill says Nougat comes out tomorrow. Is that right? Is that credible?
I don't know. I mean, it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
Why wouldn't
sure.
they wait till they have the new Nexus phones? Because those are apparently not going to be out for a couple
I mean, months. That's a big question, right? Like, that's very different from what we've been seeing up until now. I think there's been one other, you know, release of the OS that wasn't completely tied to the Nexus devices since they started Nexus. But we already know that the LG V20, which is supposed to ship in September, has already kind of teased that it's to be the first shipping device with Nougat. So that
seems unfair that LG should get that on.
A little strange that they would be able to say that, and I don't know why the reason they made. Yeah, kind of deal, how that happened.
HTC is making the new Nexus phones, right? And we know a lot about them.
As far as we know, yeah.
Yeah, the Sailfish and the Marlin?
Sailfish and the Marlin. Yeah.
Both game fishes that you sail out to sea. And
Google loves to do that.
Yeah.
They love all their code names to be creatures of the sea. Apparently, they've got a thing for creatures.
Except if they're desserts.
And desserts.
Oh, okay.
Or tasty treats, as they've said.
Meanwhile, Apple's not sitting still. I got pushed another update to iOS 10. I think they're getting very close to the final version of iOS 10 because I think we all know there's going to be a new iPhone in the next month for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although, so we're leaving the country. I think we're leaving the country right before the iPhone's supposed to arrive. Something, I'll pick one up in London or something.
If you order it, I'll take care of it for you.
Yeah. This will be the first time I've ever missed an iPhone launch. But it's interesting because this might be the first time I don't actually buy the new one.
I know. That's what I was saying. You said you weren't even interested in maybe getting it.
Well, without a headphone jack, we really got to the point now where phones are not, there's not a whole lot new. I just got, this is the new the Galaxy Note 7. And
looking phone.
I think that in many ways this is going to be even the new Apple hardware. It's an OLED screen. Apple won't be able to do that. It's, I would say, the best screen on the market today. It's very bright, very crisp. Mm-hmm. It's got a great camera. Apple could beat the camera. Their new camera is apparently going to have two imagers.
That's what we hear. Yeah, better for taking pictures inside.
So who's doing that? Is Moto Z? Somebody's doing that with a black and white and a color lens. They're doing two different
lenses. Huawei did that with the P9. Okay. I can't remember. I'm off
there are
the
a couple of new ones.
HTC M8, I think, had a... But it was using it for short depth of field.
Yeah, and it had a 5-megapixel sensor.
They were doing
sensor,
more of that kind
weird.
Of trick of, like, shift your perspective.
Yeah.
Lenovo's
that was
their,
kind of the wrong application.
Project Tango built into theirs.
See, Tango does not excite me. Why is Tango such a good thing?
Tango is an interesting thing because of what you can do.
Where did you
it.
Get that watch?
You.
That was on the table?
Yes, see, this is free. Stuff comes up on the free table. And that's how Padre is terrible.
Wow, you score.
That's the Moto 360 Sport watch.
No, but with Tango, okay, so imagine, as a developer, I could do something like, I could make a green screen effect without a green screen. I could just tell Tango, only take things that are within 5 feet of the camera.
Oh, that's it. So there's like a Z axis, and you could say if it's at a certain distance, this is, I want.
I could also use a sensor as super accurate GPS. So it's no longer just satellite. I could go into a building, and because it's always collecting data points, it will know what room, in fact, what chair of what room I am in the building. That's the kind of things that you can start.
But isn't it kind of big and clunky to have all those sensors?
Yeah, it adds a bump. It adds a bump.
It's
on
got
the
a big bump.
It's not.
It.
It's not huge. But
I don't see people buying Tango.
I see Tango as something that ends up getting included, and then developers start playing with it. Right now, it's just an oddity.
We have to. The other reason people are talking about Tango is because you can map a store.
Yes,
sure.
And so then you can go in the store and you can know where the pants are. You know, you just because you have a map of the store. We need to reshoot our tour, our 360 tour of the studio. Remember, we had one for the old brick house. And the developer who did that one says he's coming back.
Can we put the Ozo on a hat and just have you walk?
It's actually kind of complicated. And he did it with, as I remember, he did it with still pictures. I can't remember. Yeah. And then you have to, Google makes you blur out faces so you can't see people.
They do that for you, though, right?
That's it's all process, part of the deal. So, all right. So, new iPhone. You gotta buy one. You have to buy.
Yes, I definitely want one. I'm happy with my Bluetooth headphones. I am okay with dongles.
God, I don't want to have to wear Bluetooth headphones.
Well, because of the sound. The sound isn't good enough.
I walked into work today. I had headphones plugged into the headphone port on my phone and listened to a book. I don't. Why should I have an extra dongle or have to do wireless?
An extra battery.
Why?
The charge.
I wish I could keep a compilation of all the times you say, I'm not going to do that. All the things
Apple's
changed.
But this is different.
And then, like,
no, people say that. They
it.
Say, oh, they got rid of the CD. You know, you complained, but you were happy. They got rid of the floppy. You complained, but you were happy. I don't think the headphone jack. It's like saying, hey, we're going to get rid of the keyboard. You know, that's a 150-year-old invention. You don't need a keyboard.
They did that on the phone.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a keyboard.
It's a virtual
keyboard.
Well,
a physical keyboard.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm okay.
Everybody has to type Dvorak from now on. You can't use QWERTY. What about that? And everybody would say, you could reasonably say, well, that's the future. It's a more efficient system.
Sure.
We should just adopt that. I don't buy that with a headphone jack. I think that that's a universal port that everybody has, and you need it.
I was with you.
You've changed too?
You. Well, no, it's that I have a little developer thing on this, and I was able to look through the logs, and it does record every time you plug a headphone into this, and I realized I haven't plugged a headphone into this phone in 18 months.
Use wireless.
I have Bluetooth in my car, and I have a Bluetooth headset.
Yeah, in my car I don't listen to headphones, obviously.
Yeah. I have to admit, I've been playing with some head like Bluetooth stereo headsets, not just like phones. And there's some, I don't think that the audio quality is any different. I think that the hard part is figuring out how I manage it. You know, like how do I turn them on and off and, you know, and the process of that. And so I've been testing I bought them. I mean, and they didn't send them to me. The Braggy. Mm-hmm. Braggy.
Those are interesting.
Those are actually,
that was a Kickstarter.
Really,
yeah.
Really? You like those? Because that was the biggest flop ever.
No,
the Braggies. Yes, they were.
Well, I think they were like Kickstarters.
It was a Kickstarter. They were Bluetooth. They didn't have any wires.
No wires.
And they cleverly decided that the way the second headphone, one has all the juice in it, the way the second one is, they just fire radio waves through your head.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That makes me feel so much better.
You like the sound on those. A lot of people complain the sound was poor.
I think that it depends on what headphones you're comparing them to. I mean, I think that the hard part is the microphone. If you're going to use it as a cell phone, the microphone's on them. They're too far away from your mouth.
Yeah, but you also don't want to look like the Time Life operator with their boom.
Well, when we're really using these for events, then we have definitely have a big head. I don't know which ones we use. We have these big ones that come, you know, have a boom mic down and everything else, because all you care about is clarity. You know, you're not doing an ovation statement at that point.
Sure.
But we've been testing a lot of them again because we want to know. You know, the nice thing about a Bluetooth one is you set the phone down and then you walk around and you're not carrying the phone around with you.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm resistant to Bluetooth headphones. I've never actually owned a pair for myself. Primarily because anytime I ever use Bluetooth for audio with other things, I feel like it's rarely ever just stable enough.
Well,
there are random dropouts that I can't explain. I don't want that in my ear.
I'm perfectly fine
with the plugged-in earphone.
They're substituting this for innovation.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Is in my opinion, they're saying, "Oh, look how we're future forward thinking. We're eliminating the headphones port." And I don't want to be the second.
Well, the official reason is because they want to make it thinner. Because I mean,
no, that's not.
Well, I don't think there's an official reason because
we haven't heard it.
I mean,
there are a bunch of competing reasons. I think there's one is that it closes the analog connection so that. But that, okay, I mean,
analog hole.
Cory Doctorow is very worried about.
Well,
that.
It closes the analog hole from a
it's good
audio,
for DRM.
But it also, if you look at things like Square and everything else, anybody that's been using that jack
has
for other things
now, or iPhone MFI,
right? So that's they're gonna. It gives them more control there.
Right.
It also, they also do happen to own a headphone company, which would be, you know, it'd be convenient if suddenly all those headphones came out.
You can buy the new gold-plated Beats for just $3,000.
And a gold-plated dongle.
This is right. To me, a risky, well, risky proposition.
The Beats won't be, the Apple doesn't have to wait for people to support this. What we're going to see is Beats is going to come out with a whole line of straight lightning connectors, you know. And if you look at the investment, when you look at people investing, this is another one of those things where, so now everybody invests in expensive lightning headsets, not dongles, but headsets. How quickly are they going to change phones now that they have, that's another buy-in, you know, and not to be cynical.
Right. You're not going to switch to Android if everything
Yeah, I mean, if I got $300 headsets that are lightning only, I mean,
for
it's,
sure.
You know,
that's absolutely a concern or a component of that.
Yeah, so I think that those are all components of that.
Meanwhile, Android posting the highest ever market share in the latest mobile data. I think that this is Apple's doing this at a risky, risky time. If you look at the graph, Android is 86.2% of global, I admit global, mobile market share. That is significantly higher. On this graph, the blue big line is Android. iOS is the purple line hovering at around 20%. You know, it has that saw-like shape because, of course, sales go up when Apple releases an iPhone and then they taper off after each.
It is an interesting move. I mean, basically, we have to convince ourselves
it's bold
to buy a new phone. And now they've done, with the headphone jack, they've convinced people not to buy a new phone. So they've
That's what
the
I
opposite
think.
Of what they need to do.
That's what I think.
But I don't think I don't think that there is a huge conversion from Apple to Android. There won't be over 1 year. I think that if next year's is really, you know, and they don't, people don't upgrade, I think then you end up, Apple starts to see some erosion. But again, you have a lot of buy-in. I mean, not among tech folks like us that'll just go out and buy everything again, but from the average person, once they've got a bunch of apps, once they understand it, once they have all those bits and pieces, it you know, they're not all buying a new phone every single time anyway. And it's, and I think that, you know, I don't think that Apple has, I mean, I would love to see them keep on progressing as fast as they had in the past, but I'm resigned to the fact that they don't need to go as fast as they have been going.
Meanwhile, everybody else is going full speed ahead. That's the problem. Android is iterating much, much faster. Apple's a new phone every year. Android, because it's multiple manufacturers, iterating very, very rapidly. And it's a real race between manufacturers. Now, admittedly, the individual manufacturers aren't doing as well as Apple because they're splitting the market, but it's a bigger market, and it's growing all the time. I think there's a huge risk.
Isn't this Apple just returning to form? Because this is how Apple used to be in the 80s and 90s and even early into the 2000s, where they didn't care about market share.
Right.
All the Apple, the strong Apple fans said, look, we don't care. We just like it that it's a great product. They design for the higher-end market. They design for the
Here's
biggest profit margin. And 80%
of Apple's revenue comes from the iPhone. This is what's different. Yeah. There are one at this point, they're as close to a one-product company as you can get. And it's a risky thing to take your one product and say, oh, and by the way, we're going to get rid of something. They must have done market research, but we're going to get rid of something that's fundamental to the operation of everybody else's phone.
Well, I'm sure that what the market research they have is they have a lot of data about how people are using their phones.
Right.
So
they must know, like you do, when it was plugged in and not. Maybe they see people not using headphones anymore.
Right.
Didn't Apple make its name with white earbuds, and that was a big marketing thing, as you saw those white earbuds everywhere and you knew they were listening to an iPod and then later an iPhone?
Well, again, I don't think they're not going to ship them with headphones. I think they're just going to ship them with headphones that work with the Lightning connector.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And by the way, Android is not doing this also.
Motorola is. Yeah, how's that phone selling? We don't know yet because it's not out, but
it's true. But
it's coming out now.
Not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying there are others that think that's a good idea.
That's crazy talk, I think.
Yeah.
Google released Duo this week. This is their FaceTime competitor, and I think that's directly a competitor to FaceTime. And Allo is apparently just around the corner, their messaging competitor. I had a call today on the radio show from somebody who said, everybody in my family uses iPhones. I'm moving to a PC. How am I supposed to message them? Is there messages for the PC? I said, no. I said, you have to use push bullet or something like that. You could send them SMS. Apple is increasingly moving into this silo, and Google, meanwhile, is making products that are cross-platform. Duo is cross-platform. Allo will be cross-platform. Apple's new Messages is very powerful, right? This is the highlight of iOS 10 for many people.
And I have to admit, I thought that was the silliest part of the presentation.
They didn't. They spent a long time.
No, and I have completely changed only because I put my kids on beta. Mm-hmm. So my kids have
like invisible ink, the giant emojis.
They go, they figured out how to send each other disco smiley faces. like you click on it, and just like the whole takes over the whole screen.
Yeah,
like,
the lights. Oh, I'll show you how to do that.
And they're like sent. I was like, I don't even know how. I don't know what they're doing.
That's
a hidden feature. They have gone.
By the way, your kids are how old?
I was seven and eight.
So they're little kids,
but they
know better how to do it than their dad does.
Oh yeah, the part that I had to unlearn from them is how to change their password, because then they change the password, then they forget the password, and then I have to reset the whole thing. So anyway, it is good to have a family, have your kids' iPads in the family group so that you can reset their iPads every time they
that's clever.
Forget the password.
You don't have to worry about that anymore.
No. It's an hour of time to get it fixed again. But anyway, but so the message is okay. I was like, okay, wasn't a bad idea. It's probably going
to
be.
Can you get them to use Duo?
They're so tied into FaceTime. Yeah. I've tried to get them to play with it.
You like it better than FaceTime?
Yeah.
Because you can use it on Android?
Yeah, it's cross-platform. That's an advantage.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we have so many ways to use video messages. In addition to FaceTime, you know, if you want, you have Facebook Messenger. You can do video chats. You have Skype.
I will say that the big
Duo is simple.
Yeah.
That was the
problem with Hangouts or Messenger. It was that for us, it was nothing to just use that and jump on video. But I definitely, there were definitely relatives and friends that just.
See what I replaced my phone icon with on the phone? That's the Duo icon. Mm. You know, actually, I learned this last week on Twit. Who was it? Was Alex Wilhelm, I think? It didn't have his phone icon on his phone anymore. I said, wait, there's a phone. And then I realized, oh, yeah. Much like apparently analog headphones, I don't use the phone anymore. And if I'm going to use the phone, I either say, okay, Google, and have it call, or I'll use a shortcut to family member. Most of my phone calls are incoming, and I want to start using Duo.
Right now, it's
by phone number, right? So the people you call show
up. For sure. It's linked up to your phone number. It's not linked to a Gmail or a Google account, which is definitely a bonus. The challenge right now is that it's not audio, but apparently they're working on that.
I mean, audio
plans. Plans to have audio calls in Duo as well at some point.
Well, I think there's a trick. Just keep it in your pocket and talk.
Just out loud.
Just walk down the street. Yeah. It'll be audio.
I don't love video calls. It's
Nobody does.
I don't like calls.
I don't ever do calls unless like it's.
I don't like technology.
No, I mean it's
all right. We're all done. Thank you, everybody. Bye.
No, it's text and email for me. I have a limited plan, so it's got unlimited data, but it only has 100 minutes. I never go over 10 minutes.
Well, I do not like having meetings. Like every meeting that's a video meeting, the first 10 minutes is trying to figure out why someone's connection isn't working, and then the rest of it is, you know, I'm not a big fan of monotasking. So if you put me in a box where I have to monotask, which is like you put me in a video thing where I have to sit there and look at you and talk rather than fiddling around, which is what I usually do when I'm talking. You know, I clean my office. That's what I do. It keeps me calm.
Alex is our visitor from the future. Most people just call it tasking.
I'm like monotasking.
You call it monotasking.
Yeah.
It's like, because the norm is anything but one task at a time.
Yeah. No. Like, yeah. There's very few times. There's no.
Oh, I don't monotask.
I don't.
I have too many things to do.
It's just
you should learn to write.
Everyone knows when I have lots of meetings because my office gets really clean. And when my office is clean, I literally disassemble my keyboard and I clean every bit of it.
No,
it just gives me something to do while I'm talking.
Yeah.
And so,
totally with you.
Anyway.
Oh, this is fun. This is our first Twit from the new studio, the East Side Studio. And so far, so good. I think if you're listening at home or watching at home, you can see that not much has changed, right? This is an all-in-studio Twit because our Skype-asaurus is still being constructed. Or maybe it's working, but we just didn't want to rely on it by chance. So it's great to have our regular hosts and our staff hosts, including Megan Maroney from TNT, iOS Today. Wonderful to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Father Robert Balasair, Digital Watch Stealer, and Digital Jesuit. No. I did. I put that on the giveaway table. That, and you got the cookie jar, I hope. The Pillsbury Doughboy cookie jar.
Oh, I almost grabbed that. I don't know why I didn't.
The Digital Jesuit, he is the host of Twiet and Know How, and it has been Grow How lately. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes.
But we made you uproot your farm.
Yeah, it's now growing on the roof of the Jesuit residence in San Francisco.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So it gets no sun.
No sun. It gets a lot of fog.
It is. It's out in the avenues. It does.
A lot of moisture.
Yeah, yeah. Also, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps. Not technically a staff member here, but boy, you sure are a member of the family. We couldn't do it without you.
It's been great.
Thank you for bringing our 360-degree view today, the Ozo.
My pleasure.
Camera. And also from TNT and All About Android, Jason Howell. Our show today brought to you by Perfect Timing for those of you. What? What are you laughing at? Did I say something wrong? What?
I was hamming it up, Leo. I'm sorry.
Did you make a face?
No, I actually made absolutely no face.
No, you did.
That's just the regular face.
You made a face. Do it again, just because I missed it.
I can't do that.
I'll have to watch the video. You'll have to watch the video. Oh, man. Behind my back. Jason's the only guy who fits this table. Everybody else looks like they're the little kids here.
Still too tall for me, too.
Isn't it funny how you get used to
the style of table on the TNT set?
Stair height and table height. There must be a standard table height, right?
Well, or we could just get power chairs.
There you go.
We could stand.
You could get a whole bunch of barber chairs.
Aren't you glad I didn't decide kind of all of a sudden? We should do Twit standing and just not no chairs.
No, but look at how many points we'd get on our Apple Watches.
It's true. It's true.
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Your Apple Watch people tell you to sit down.
You now have the competitive. It's just mostly when you're managing it.
Sport.
If I have to put my Apple Watch on charge in the middle of the day, I really feel like I'm getting shorted. I mean, like, I did some walking in the warehouse, and did I get any points for that? No.
Okay, so far the only thing I use this for is to control this when it's doing YouTube, so I don't have to get up to push
that. That's the exact opposite.
That's over there. I mean.
That's the exact opposite. That's the I don't want to take any steps watch. Actually, we are going to talk about a new Apple Watch. The rumor is it's coming soon. But first, let's tell you what to do with the old stuff, the old phones and iPads and computers. Gazelle.com, the trusted online marketplace for selling your used gadgets and for buying gently used gadgets to replace lost gadgets or just to save a little bit of money. For trade-ins, you go to Gazelle.com. You're going to get a quote that's good for 30 days. The 30-day quote is on, you know, your benefit because you're not obligated in any way. So, you know what? I think we're going to have a new iPhone within 30 days, pretty sure, right? So go get a quote now on your old iPhone just in case. You're not obligated. They are. They promise to pay you that price anytime in the next 30 days. You have 30 days to decide. Once you do, and by the way, before you do, throw in a few other gadgets. You've got other stuff you don't want. Throw it in. Once you decide to pull the trigger, they'll send you a box, pay for shipping. Turn it around fast, send you a check or a PayPal credit or an Amazon gift card, and they bump those up by 5%. So if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, that's a really, really good deal. They also take the very best stuff they get in trade and sell it back. After a 30-day rigorous inspection to make sure it's fully functional, no major scratches, everything works fine. And, of course, they'll back it with a 30-day return policy. So you can buy as well on Gazelle, iPhone 6S, 6S Plus, iPads, Samsung Galaxy phones. You know, there's going to be a flood of new iPhones coming in as people buy the next iPhone. This would be a great time to get a great deal on an iPhone from Gazelle.com. They do provide financing on all devices by Affirm. You could do that at checkout and get approved instantly. They also have a 12-month warranty for cell phones and iPads. That's Assurant powered. And it includes water damage and cracked screens as well as, you know, hardware defects. That's Gazelle. Love them. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Give new life to used electronics. Trade them in for cash or buy certified pre-owned at gazelle.com. Today, we thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. When is Allo coming, Jason? Do you know? Have they said anything?
We pretty much are certain that it's going to come out, or at least we thought it was going to come out with Nougat. So it's very possible we hear
maybe
about
Monday.
It on Monday.
Excited about because I think of Universal messaging platform has some, if it does all the things that Messages does, and it looks like it'll do a lot of them.
And it goes to all the different devices that you want to use.
Exactly.
I think that's the problem right now with
exactly
the whole like tying into a phone number. It's like why I don't use WhatsApp is
right.
That I have more than one device that I want to connect to.
Right. Watch 2. What do we know about that, Megan Moran?
Well, we don't know anything for sure, but of course we have all the rumors, Mark Gurman and Bloomberg,
One rumor was wrong.
One about it being connected to a cell phone. Yeah, that's what we heard. We heard you were going to be able to untether it.
It'd have 3G built in.
Yeah, and apparently we won't be able to do that because of battery life issues, which makes sense.
But Mark, talk us through what we know so far.
No,
oh,
Mark,
this is my fault. This is my fault. Actually, I'm not going to even say it's my fault. It's Bloomberg's fault. Their stupid autoplay video.
Let me talk you what we know.
Mark, let me talk through this here, Mark.
Let me talk you through what we know so far. Mark. But it will have GPS built in. That's what we think, which, I mean, isn't a big deal for most people, but I use it to run, and I also bring my cell phone with me so that it can accurately track. If I don't bring my cell phone, I still get an idea of how far I've run, but not exactly. And as we talked about before, you need to know exactly how much you worked out and be able to see it, or else you didn't
or
really
else it
work
didn't
out.
Happen.
It didn't happen.
But by the way, Robert, don't worry. You can control your TV with it.
I'm good.
So here's the good news, right? So, there's a remote control built in.
Yeah, supposedly. So, yeah, I mean, and it's important to, you know, note. I mean, we know this about, you know, when a new phone comes out versus when a new OS comes out. Watch OS 2 is also coming out. So that will be separate. We can run that on our current watches. And then there's Apple Watch 2 that also will come out if we want a new watch.
GPS, you're a runner. GPS is pretty important.
It is pretty important. I mean, I strap this giant iPhone to my arm.
That's your GPS.
Just so that, I can know how far I ran, and I can run without it, but then it's not as accurate.
Right, right.
So I will like that. I mean, also, it's nice to have anyone be able to track me if something horrible should happen. Silence.
I hope
that got dark real quick. Wow.
Is there an emergency button that you could press?
Well, that, you know, that is coming with watchOS 2, the emergency button. Remember, that was the big thing. So it's great for people who
I'd give that to my daughter.
Yeah.
Walking around campus.
Right. Or an older parent. Yep. It's great. It will contact your emergency contacts.
Is Apple going to call it the I've fallen and I can't get up feature?
No,
I think it's
they
I find my body. That's too far.
Find my body.
Oh, yeah. That was actually further. The line was here. I got here.
Yeah. That's all right. He's taking my role usually.
So I think that'll be a game changer for some too. That it'll make you feel safe, give you a reason to buy it, because we kind of need a reason. You need one big reason to buy this watch. A lot of people have said, I have no reason. A lot of people bought the first one and don't wear it anymore.
Well, and wearables, just as a category, it's been so up and down as far as like validating itself over the last couple of years. And I think a lot of people are still kind of like grasping at like the reason why it exists, and B, they need to do that. But if there's one category that really has shown over the years to kind of have lasting power, it's the fitness aspect. So if you have the GPS, tie that in with the fitness functionality, slap an Apple logo on it, that never hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that makes perfect sense.
So we learned actually a lot about Apple this week from Barbara Streisand.
Naturally. I mean, that's where I get all my news from.
People who love people. Barbara Streisand was on NPR, and she told the host, well, Tim Cook told me that iOS 10 is coming out September 30th.
The new Mark Gurman, Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that she cares is apparently Siri mispronounces her name. Hmm. Could you, anybody have an iOS device? Could you ask, I don't know, how would you find out how it pronounces her name? Ask her.
Who is Barbara Streisand? Maybe.
Yeah. Who is Barbara Streisand?
No.
She's
Siri doesn't know?
Yeah. Apparently, she emphasizes the sex.
Search the web for something if you ask.
You got a guy in there. That's not Siri. That's a man. There's a man in your phone.
And he does whatever I ask him to do.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes, sort of, a little bit.
Nice, nice.
What's one of her movies, Barbara Streisand?
Who starred in The Way We Were?
Who starred in The Way We Were?
Our internet's really slow here. It's only 20 megabits per second, 20 gigabits per second.
Interesting question, Megan.
Megan.
Okay.
Thanks.
Interesting Siri. Pause. Siri. The emphasis is on the second S of her surname with a Z. So it says Streisand, which actually is what I just said. It should be Streisand.
Streisand.
So she called Tim Cook. And she says, Streisand with a soft S like sand on the beach. I've been saying this for my whole career. And so what did I do? I called the head of Apple, Tim Cook. This is my Barbara Streisand impression. And he delightfully agreed to have Siri change the pronunciation of my name finally with the next update on 30 September.
We're going to roll that one in there.
You know, does she know you can get Siri to pronounce anything any way you want it to?
But she's Barbara. She doesn't have to.
Well, she probably did. She probably called him up because that in that big interview that he did where he said it was lonely to be CEO, she was like, oh, he's lonely. Oh, I'm
poor,
also lonely.
Poor Tim.
I'll call him up.
People who need people are the happiest. Isn't that funny? I think she's actually wrong because by all accounts, the Apple event, we still haven't seen invitations, will be early in September, and they certainly will have a new iPhone out by, say, the 23rd.
My guess is he told her by the 30th.
Right.
So she would stop calling him. Yeah. You know, I think that was the
He probably said, Barbara, by the end of the month, you'll be happy. Yes. Trust me.
Well, that was
and
the other
she interpreted it that way.
Right, right.
The carrier phones wouldn't come out till September 23rd. That's what Mark Gurman also said.
Right.
That they would
I
come
think
out,
we'll,
the carrier
we'll
ones
see
would,
these by then.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as we're doing the Apple rumor mill, let's go for it. By the way, here's Apple's response to the fact that Android phones are 82% of the marketplace. New report confirms that iPhone and Android combined are 99% of all phones sold.
What is the 1% of smartphone?
BlackBerry.
BlackBerry. Oh, that's sad.
And Windows
BlackBerry,
phone.
Windows.
Don't
Windows
forget
phone.
The Windows
yeah,
phone.
Yeah, having a party. Yeah. Very small party.
99% market share. That's pretty. Did Apple announce that? But together, we have 99% market share. Wow. That is in the
I think BlackBerry is pretty much just the government. I mean, we all the government agencies we work with, you still see these.
Android 82%, iOS 14%, Windows 2%, BlackBerry 0.3.
There you go.
Holy cow.
Again, it's the government agencies.
Holy cow. Wait a minute, that was second quarter 2015. The current one, 2016 market share, 0.1% for BlackBerry, 0.6%.
But they got a good car business.
Holy cow.
That's
probably a rounding error at this moment.
Holy cow.
So the phones are. I mean, but the car business is the big business for them now, right?
For BlackBerry? Oh, QNX. Yeah, they own QNX. And they're in my TV. I've got WebOS. Do they own WebOS? No. HP owns WebOS. Rewind that and edit that out, would you? Thank you. Do we have that capability now in the new studios? No. Yeah, Carson's laughing.
I would highly.
Hey Carson. Leo, if you want let's to see. Wait a minute. We have a camera on Carson. Do we have that camera? Can we see? That's the shot? Why do you have all those lights on you? All right. But we are going to have a Carson cam.
Wishful thinking.
We are going to have a Carson cam. I see he's got lights. Do you have a microphone yet or no? Okay.
That is something that you need, Leo, is an EVS.
What's that?
That is the replay. So you can take the whole show and just shift it by 10 minutes, and then you can rewind, move things around, change them.
And then nobody would even hear my stupid comments, let alone...
You can literally just re-edit the whole thing.
Well, for $45,000, that should do that.
I know, right?
No, the EVS is more expensive.
Well, yeah. They don't have 360 degrees.
It's like, what, 70 Alexes? 80
Alexes? They can only do 45 degrees.
It's a little bit more.
It's 100 Alexes?
It's a little bit.
All of the Alexes.
It's not all of the Alexes, but it's...
EVS is expensive?
Yeah, it's like 150.
Because it's hard to record, because you got to have a digital buffer for 10 minutes. That's a lot.
No. It'll do digital buffer. It basically, you can take... So with an EVS, you can take up to six inputs, but typically you do four.
Did you use that for President Obama?
I can't comment on it on other shows.
If I were President Obama, I would have that.
No, actually, all that, all
President
that stuff,
Trump's
that stuff has all been
it.
Live.
It's all live, yeah. Wow.
But it's like
I bet Trump would pick like that. That'd be useful.
Yeah, no, so all like every time you see a replay for sports, that's all these EVSs. And so what happens is
aren't they delayed? Like isn't it like you're watching the game
No. A live game might be maybe 20 seconds behind.
Okay.
But it's so basically the EVS operator basically has four inputs coming in. I mean they have six in and outs, but they usually use two to send back out to the switch.
So it's a digital dump, right? Like radio stations.
Yeah, and but it can record up to 24 hours just sitting there, just recording everything coming in from the cameras that they have. You might have three or four EVS operators sitting there getting four cameras each for like a football game, and then the director will say, "Hey, give me that shot," and they'll literally just go back and play it back. But what we use it for a lot is to actually, like, if you're at a conference and you've got like six rooms. And you can just time shift all the rooms by a couple minutes and, 10 minutes here, half an hour there, and play it back. It's awesome for this kind of thing.
I don't think we'll be getting one of those.
I think
we need one of those.
See, this is my job, is to come in.
Make me want to buy stuff. I just bought this. I can't afford anything else.
NewTek does make a smaller version called a three-play.
Three-play.
Yeah, talk to them about that.
Oh, all right. We could put a three-play.
If NewTek's
listening. Put a three-play on there.
These guys need a three-play.
Yeah. All right. According to Mac Rumors, the name for the new iPhone is iPhone 7. Just a rumor, kids. iPhone
so
7
creative.
And iPhone 7 Plus.
I see what they're doing. They're following Samsung's naming convention.
Yeah. They went, now the everything's in
7, right?
That's what happens. When you share a 99% market share, everything syncs up.
Yeah.
It's all they're all friends now.
They're all on 7. There were rumors they might drop numbers. We started that maybe the numbers were not.
It has been so confusing when they dropped the iPad numbers. It was like, I don't know what even to call it anymore.
It's just the current iPad, right?
That was horrible.
But they were going to call it the Pro too, the iPhone Pro. But they're not doing that apparently.
Well, it sounded like they were going to have a third
Pro,
phone.
So that,
right.
It sounded like they were going to have a third phone that was going to
be a
better
Pro. Yeah, more expensive. Call it Pro. Charge more.
It's actually just two phones in one case.
And the thing is for me, if it had like the two cameras and you could draw on it, like the big thing for me now in the phone is I just want my pencil to work on my phone. Like it's
and still stick out of the lightning connector, the long way.
I never charge it that way. I use the little coupler.
By the way,
you have the little coupler there, and you
see the little stylus. You pull
Wait, can
that
you put
right
it
out
in backwards?
Of the Note 7.
I know.
No, don't do it.
Shall I try?
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it.
Hey, they learned their lesson. Okay.
This is they call it the Leo. You can't put it in backwards anymore. So.
Good. The way it should be.
Now, this is pressure sensitive. It's not as good as an iPad Pro, I'd be honest, pencil. But at least you have a stylus on a.
I'm buying one.
Are you going to buy a Note?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I buy one every year.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, because it works with the Gear VR. So I
right, you
I
need get to.
So I buy a new. I have,
so
I
have to buy usually, a new Gear VR.
Yeah, you know what bugs me. Yeah, this will bug you too. See that back? It looks like a mirror. Doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's mirrored. It's not a mirror though. They do something so it doesn't reflect you.
Oh.
Like why would you do that?
Like a matte type thing.
It's a fake mirror.
Yeah.
Why would you go to all the trouble put a mirrored back on but not have it be a mirror, which would be useful.
It looks pretty that way.
Have you heard about how you can take a selfie, though?
A what fee?
A selfie. Have you heard of that? You can just look at yourself that way.
What? That's insane.
You know,
it's electronic.
Wait a minute. You use the camera on the phone to look at yourself?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
It's got a diffraction pattern on the back. That actually could be a safety feature.
This is this week.
Probably is.
Right.
If you make a mirrored back, if you have this in your car, say on the driver's seat,
you
turn and the sun hits
shine
you.
In your
shine
face.
In your face.
Oh, that's probably a safety feature.
Yeah.
Also probably cuts down on the visibility of things like
fingerprints
and scuffs
and
all that kind of stuff.
It's a real fingerprint magnet.
Mm. Yeah.
I was surprised at the amount of upset about this. Google has announced that they're going to kill Chromium apps on Windows and Macintosh. This is a kind of a feature. I don't even know how many people use this, but the idea
I
was...
I read that. I was like, what? I didn't know
there were apps. There are apps. In fact, if I look at my Chrome, which I'm running right now on my Mac, up in the left corner of the bookmarks bar, show apps, and that will pull up both extensions and apps. So that's up here. And then I can scroll through my apps. Some of the apps are more standalone than others. Some of them are web, HTML5, and some of them are extensions. But the ones that are apps, standalone apps, are going away. And Google's story is,
no one was using them.
Yeah, probably nobody.
There's a lot of echo here, and we decided to get rid of the echo.
They said the reason they did these in the first place is because we wanted to make kind of certain experiences on the web that we couldn't do in a browser, like working offline, sending notifications, connecting to hardware. So they started this Chrome app thing so that you could do more within a browser. And I think this is reasonable because nowadays, really, the browser is the application you live in for the most part. But they say in the blog post, since then, we've worked with web standards community to enable increasing number of these use cases on the web. So HTML5 has gotten more powerful. And it can do a lot of these things. There's service worker, web push. More capabilities will continue to be available. So they say in order to simplify Chrome, we're just going to take the packaged apps out. 1% of users on Windows, Mac, and Linux actively use Chrome packaged apps. Apparently, all of those 1% are in Reddit, though, because there was a lot of upset.
People were I think Reddit, there's just generally a lot of upset.
Yeah, pretty
in general, everything. That's just where it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if the idea was to be offline, does this just show how much we're online constantly now as opposed to when
Interesting question. I don't know if new browser capabilities support more online offline stuff, or they just notice people don't really care about it.
Or people don't think
everybody's online all the time.
Yeah,
it's a different environment, because remember when the Chromebooks were first released, that was everyone's like, oh, this is stupid. Why would I ever have a computer that's crippled when it's offline? Now it's, well, if I'm offline, I'm probably not getting any work done anyways.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if from a Mac user perspective or a Windows user perspective, I don't really think of the Chrome solutions as something I can use offline. So, I think that part of it is there was no even thought that, like, you think, oh, if I'm going to use
just accepted the fact that it's a browser,
or
I'm
Sheets
not use
or
it
whatever.
Offline.
I mean, I run my whole company on Google Docs, so it's something we use a lot, but we don't.
But you can download Google Docs and use it offline. You know that, right?
There's so many people using it at the same time. I just don't know the collision the reason we use them is because ours are actively, all the sheets are tied together. So when you change one thing, it changes across many sheets and it'd be very complicated.
You could tell I've been using a lot of Chrome apps because I still have the original Angry Birds, the Google I.O. 2010, and the Gangnam Style game app.
I think that's just a picture of you and you just like it for
it
that reason.
Look
right?
Like you.
As Psy. Psy, the Oppo Gangnam Style guy. All right. So anyway, I'll mention it. It won't be till 2018 that they'll be gone completely, but they'll start phasing those out over the next year.
Hangouts get phased out a lot faster.
Sometimes I wonder what Google's overall strategy is. It's just
not very.
It's baffling
because they've had some decent products, and either they combine it with a crap product so no one wants to use it, or as it starts to gain steam, they say, "Well, we're not going to support it anymore." Hangouts is actually a pretty decent service.
Well, Hangouts aren't going away. So the Hangouts themselves are staying there. It's the Hangouts on Air, the streaming solution that's connected to that. And if you look at what most people were using them for, I think they were just streaming them talking to one other person. I think that was you didn't need 10 people to.
This is a challenge for Google because, of course, they operate at such a massive scale. Even if only 1% of users adopt something,
that's
maybe
still so many people.
Hundreds of thousands or millions of people. Millions. And those people are all going to be upset. And I think it does hurt Google because I have to say, when Allo comes out, I will have some resistance to going all in on it because, well, maybe they'll lose interest in 3 years or whatever, and then I'll be stuck again. Nobody wants to keep going through that process. It's got to hurt them.
And Google's really good at coming out of the gate with a strong face, like being super positive on a new product that they're launching right out of the gate. And so you get kind of swept up in it and you're like, wow, the promise of this is so cool. Like, yes, of course I'm going to get in on Allo. But then it's the 1, 2, 3 years down the line where they kind of trail off. It's like they get distracted. They see a squirrel. And they go after that new thing, and this old thing that was once so promising, gets kind of left behind in the dust. And as a user, that's very confusing, especially when they've got like 5 million messaging platforms.
Really a mess.
And like, what on earth do I use?
Such a
mess.
We saw that at I/O though, right? I mean, because we were sitting there, and I was talking to the developers, and it's different from the I/O I attended 6 years ago. Where everyone was wide-eyed and very excited about the things that Google was rolling out
this time.
Now it's sort of like, oh, okay, well, I want to wait 2 years before I start developing for that because I don't want to start and then have them kill it.
That's not a good place to be when you're Google trying to push out all of these initiatives to get people excited, especially at a developer conference.
At some point, that whole throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what stick model, it fails. You're too big for that anymore. Give me something that's cooked. Give me something that's ready. Give me something that I know you're going to keep around for more than just the next executive that gets put in and wants to kill a project.
Well, and I know when we developed a lot of Hangout tools because we were doing a lot of Hangouts as a service, and we kept them all internal, like because I didn't want to go through the trouble of externalizing them because I was like, oh, I'll go through that trouble, and I just didn't know. I never knew how solid that ground was going to be to step on it, and so I just was like, I'll use them for my and it was just easier to keep them internal.
I noticed that with Duo, I was really reluctant to invite other people to use it. It's like, oh. I don't want to put my reputation on the line and get everybody, and then everybody says, "Oh yeah, no, I'm not going to." And it's another Google. Never mind, forget it.
Well, I'm excited. It's cross-platform. The problem is that I use a lot of other, I'd love to get my mom to start using it.
She likes using FaceTime because it's easy for her, and this would be just as easy. There's a picture of me. She presses it, the knock knock thing she'd probably like, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't want to. I'm nervous about getting her in on that, and then a year later, oh yeah, Mom, we got to stop using that. We're going to use something else.
And that's the hard. The hard part was when folks that aren't used to. Because for me, I just have a lot of messages. Like I put it on along with my Slack and Messenger and Hangouts and and it's just kind of like
It's like my whole front folder screen is a whole screen.
Well, my whole front screen is just messaging. What flavor?
It's worse for Android users because we get conflicting. The manufacturer wants us to, Samsung wants us to use their Messenger. You start using Hangouts, Google says, "Oh, don't use Hangouts. You should use our Messenger." Facebook, you launch Facebook Messenger, says, "Why don't you use me?" It's a mess. It's really bad, somebody has to figure this out. Oracle says we're behind this. Apparently, the Oracle lobbyists in Washington D.C. There's something called the Campaign for Accountability. It's a nonprofit. It's a mystery group. They won't say who pays for their activities. And within the Campaign for Accountability, there is the Google Transparency Project, which exposes villainies carried out by the search giant. Well, apparently that's Oracle. Oracle, you may remember, is in a big suit with Google at the moment. And actually, what's weird is Senior Vice President of Oracle, Ken Gluck, admitted it. Oracle is absolutely a contributor, one of many, to the Transparency Project. It's not clear if there are many, by the way. This is important information for the public to know. Well, yes, it is.
What are they talking about with Google, specifically with the Transparency Project?
Well, should we find out what they're saying?
I have to admit, there's a lot of things I disagree with, but I don't really think of them doing.
A while back, there was an Oracle PR creator who was basically complaining that the reason why the lawsuits were going against Oracle was because Google has too much mind share in the public.
The judge was using Google.
Precisely. People just like Google, so they think Google can do no wrong. And this sounds like an extension of that. It's like, well, if you knew what Google did behind closed doors, you wouldn't like them so much.
If you look at this, it looks like a nonprofit, that it's somebody. Google and government explore the data. White House kept close tabs on FTC Google probe. Google pulled White House strings to kill telecom treaty. Google's revolving door in the U.S., Google's revolving door in Europe. The revolving door is, of course, people going from government into Google and back backwards.
Because no other company would ever hire someone from the government.
Google-funded speakers dominate policy conferences. Google pressed on White House visits. This is like politics. This is like the kind of stuff you see in political attack ads. Eric Schmidt, Obama's chief corporate ally. And so when you read stories, and by the way, this is the new thing to do, by the way, is you create a kind of a shady group that looks very data heavy and responsible. You create a lot of data, which you pass along to then mainstream media, who picks it up as information and reports it. It's a great way to hide your agenda and slant the news a little bit against your opponents.
It's pretty ironic that they're funding this Google Transparency Project and they're secretly behind this Transparency Project.
Transparently. Well, now you know, okay? AT&T, Apple, and Google are going to join with the FTC to try to kill robocalls. Oy, don't you hate robocalls?
It's not going to work.
Never does.
Never does.
They try. They keep trying. It's a task force. I'm sorry, a strike force. That's up from task force.
It seems like they could almost do it. They could almost do it automatically without any, because every time you get a robocall, you get that weird silence at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It feels like you could just have a setting on your phone that just said, if I get that weird silence at the beginning, just
people do that. Just there's software to do it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the carriers, of course, don't want to support this because, well,
they make a lot of money with it.
They make a lot of money on it. So it's, you have to usually, to use these kinds of tools, port your phone number through another company. They get the call first and then route it to you, and they listen for exactly the silence and stuff, and they kill robocalls. There are a number of services that do this, like I think it's Robo No More or something like that. But I don't know if I want to pass my phone through another company. That seems like ideal
scenario. I would just love Apple to have a little switch that I just want to turn that off.
They are participating in this, along with Verizon and Comcast. They're going to report to the FCC by October 19th with concrete plans to accelerate the development and adoption of new tools and solutions, says AT&T Chief Officer Randall Stevenson. He's the chairman. What they're hoping to do is implement caller ID verification standards to to help block calls from spoofed phone numbers. That's a big problem.
That's the big part of it right there. You end up getting this call that's totally from your own area code. I get so many of those.
From 707,
like, what did I do?
Yeah.
I feel like somewhere along the line I totally messed up. Well, that's as a result, I'm now getting those.
I don't ever answer a call unless it has the name on it. It must be someone I know. If it's just a phone number, I assume it's a robot.
Right. And in some systems you can, at least modify a setting that says if this number calls back again, block it. Or at least I don't see it. Don't ring my phone when it calls, and then it doesn't bother
you. The problem with all of these task force strike forces is that they're going to suggest the same thing. You find the company that does the robocalls, and you can find up to $10,000 per call. The problem is you can literally create a robocall company overnight,
right.
Do 10,000 calls,
right.
And then shut
disappear.
Down. So if you go after that company, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And you can't stop that. So unless you're going to change the rules about how you set up a limited liability corporation and accept payment from companies who want you to robocall on their behalf, you can't stop robocalls.
Tom Wheeler, chairman of the FCC, says, this scourge must stop.
Tom.
The bad guys are beating the good guys with technology, due in large part to industry inaction. Everybody agrees robocalls are horrible. There's nothing you can do. There's a do not call registry, but they don't adhere to that. There's nothing you can do. You just get the calls. There are technological solutions. I've used True Messenger. That's a Swedish company. Have you ever tried that on your Android phone? They keep a database it's kind of crowdsourced of spam calls, spam numbers. But the problem is the really worst people don't use the same number twice. They use random numbers. Spoofing, if you could stop spoofing, then things like Truecaller would work.
I mean, what about that? Make spoofing calls illegal?
I think that's what they're trying to do.
If you have time on your hands, I used to have a lot of fun with robocalls. Like someone would call through, and I'd go, hey, what are you selling? And I'd talk to him for a little while, and I'd go, oh, that is such a great idea. Someone's at the door. Can you wait a second? And I just put the phone down. And I found that if you came back every 5 or 6 minutes and did that, you could hold someone on the call for like over 37 minutes was my record.
Oh, I love that. Great.
Yeah, so
that's perfect.
So if you're not really busy, you get one of those calls, you got to tell them. And the more excited you're like, oh, this is exactly what I wanted. Oh, I can't believe that you called right now. This is the timing. I'm sorry. I just got to get something out of it.
But I promise I'll be back. I'll be back.
And then, there are some people, you do that. And you always felt like you blew it when you do that. You set them down. And then you come back like 4 minutes later and they were gone. And you were like, oh, missed the opportunity. I obviously was not exuberant enough about how I was going to.
I'm still waiting. I want one of those tech support calls where they try to get you installed.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
I have my suite ready. It's on this computer right now so that if they try to install malware on my computer, it actually takes over their computer.
Oh, you can't do that. That's illegal.
It's totally illegal.
And but they started it.
I'm talking theoretically now.
Wow. Theoretically. There are people doing that, aren't there? So we had the guy on... the new screensavers, right, Carson? Mm-hmm. The Jolly Roger phone company. it's kind of low tech, but it's hysterical.
That's awesome.
What you do when you get a telemarketer is you conference them in with the Jolly Roger phone number, and then he starts playing a recording of exactly what you're talking about, where, he'll say, wait a minute, I'm sorry, I got distracted. What were you saying? Or... I should play. Should I play a little bit of it? Do you remember this?
I was co-hosting.
Yeah. It was so funny.
February 20th.
Yeah. Let's see if I could find. They have some sample Jolly Rogers on here.
I'll put the link.
The problem is they go on for a long time.
Okay.
But, he say, well, do you ever just wake up and you can't remember anything and you're like a little groggy? That just happened to me. So could you start over? And then it really is fun to hear people yelling and screaming at him after a while. Here we go. Agent, not sure if this is a recording. Trying to pitch me anyway. Can you hear this?
Hi, Mr. and Mrs. Estrada.
Yes?
Hi, Mr. Estrada. This is Kirsten with
Cal. Oh, you're a real person?
So his voice is recorded. It's random.
Oh, actually, hey, hang on a second. Hey, honey. Yeah?
That's perfect.
Well, I'm on the phone. Well, we haven't really gotten that far. I'm not sure yet. Sorry. Never mind. Can I talk to you later, honey? Okay, thanks. Bye. Sorry. Okay, I'm back.
Oh, this is awesome.
Who's this?
Not a problem.
Can you start over? Who's this? Why are you calling?
Yeah, this is Kirsten.
I feel sorry for Kirsten. She's 21. She couldn't get a job out of college. This is the best she could do.
You tell her,
so this is pretty
promises
much what
a lot
what
of
what
money.
Do. Yeah.
Good that it's this does it for you.
In your area, in regards to solar.
Question is it as effective as a recording?
Right now, solar.
It just drives people crazy.
I know, it's awesome.
To help advertise.
So she's
but if everybody did this, if we all decided,
so bad for
if we all decided to do this, though, it would like literally shut the whole industry down because their whole thing is based on you hanging up immediately. Like,
right.
If you're not the kind of person
his software waits for a pause.
Right.
Hi. How much do you pay on your electricity bill?
Hello.
It's satisfying.
How much do you pay on your electricity bill every month?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And all park it at all? Anything?
It's a totally okay. work.
Eventually, he says, "Oh, a bee landed on my head." And I mean, it's mean, but it's satisfying because we all suffer from that.
Yeah, see, I do feel bad for that person though. They're just trying to pay some bills.
I did telemarketing when I was living in Montreal.
Did you? Yeah, it's just the worst job
for
you
a
get.
Few months because apparently, at least when I lived in Montreal, it was like 1996, and I was only there for like half a year. But apparently Montreal was a hotbed of telemarketing positions, and you know they always promise good money.
How horrible was it?
I ended up working in three different places before I was like, all right, this is not for me. It was pretty bad. I mean, one of them was really bad. One of them was
a lot
really
of hangups,
just,
or
yeah, but that kind of came with the territory. One of them was one of those vacations, like, hey, stand by. You've been selected for a vacation, blah blah blah, and you were lucky if you got. I don't know. You were doing okay if you got like five sales a week. So you're talking, you know, I think I was working 30 hours a week.
Are you on commission or hourly?
It's commission.
Oh.
But, you know, you're putting in your time, and if you get a sale, you get like $90. So there was always that potential that today could be a great day, and I can get five sales, and wow, that just adds up quick. But there were other ones that were a lot shadier, like selling white pages to or business listings in business white pages to companies, and it was just a total sham. And it was just like, and they were everywhere. You could get these jobs so easily, and I mean, it's just As an operator, though, like I'm trying to listen to this and put myself on the other side from when I was doing that, and I guess I'd be a little upset, but I wouldn't be offended personally because I'd know what it is that I do for a living.
Yeah, so they are wasting your time.
I would quit that place and I would go to a different telemarketing position, I suppose, if I was really dead set to be a telemarketer.
Wow. Well, we're glad you didn't become a telemarketer.
I am too. It was not very fun. Yeah.
I have friends, you know, getting out of high school, and that's what you do, and it's the best job you can get, and I feel bad for them. But, so I'm usually very nice. I say, put me on your do not call list, and thanks, have a nice day, because I know that I feel bad for them. But it does get to you after a while.
For sure.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. Jason Howell is here, former telemarketer Jason Howell.
Wait, you know too much now.
First thing you have to change is lower third.
Also host of TNT and All About Android from MacBreak Weekly and the Pixel Core, it's Alex Lindsay. Always great to have you. Thanks for the Ozo. If you're just tuning in and watching our live stream, our first live stream from our new Eastside Studios, you can also watch it in 360 if you'd like to kind of see what it looks like to be in the room. Alex has brought an Ozo camera and is streaming it to our YouTube feed, youtube.com/twit, but also to his page. And it's a little bit higher quality there at the Pixel Core, pixelcore.com.
And there's just like a 360 button there at the top. You
can just press the 360 button.
Just press.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Also with us, Mr. Father, the Reverend Wright. What are the different honoraria titles I could call you? I could Father, right?
Father, Reverend.
Honorable, the Reverend.
Reverend.
Can I call you Reverend?
You can call me Reverend.
I always thought that was a Protestant thing. A priest can be Reverend.
We're Reverends.
Are you the right Reverend? That's a bishop.
Mostly the wrong Reverend.
Father Robert Balasair, Padre SJ on the Twitter. He's also the digital Jesuit, and we thank the church for letting us have you for the time being.
They're taking me back for a month.
So I hear.
Yeah.
What is now? You told me you have to go to Rome sometime soon.
I do. So we've got this thing that the Jesuits do every generation or so, and I'm part of the next one.
Wow!
I tried to. Get
is it
out
like of an ecumenical council kind of a
kind
thing?
Of, yeah.
Yeah. A synod.
We call it a general congregation. We're going to elect a new leader.
Oh wow!
And then we kind of set the agenda for the Jesuits for the next 10, 15 years.
So the Jesuits are a subgroup of Catholics. There's Franciscans, right. There's Dominicans. I always think of them as abbots, not abbots, friars, as monks, but they're not monks.
No, Jesuits are very non-monk. That's part of our charism. So we are on the largest order of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And we're known for schools. So Georgetown, Boston College, right. Those are all ours.
There are a lot of great schools. And, of course, the Pope is a Jesuit.
Yes, he is.
And I should mention that one of my heroes was a Jesuit priest and a teacher at LaSalle, I think. Mm-hmm. John McLaughlin of the McLaughlin Group passed this week. He did 34 years of shows, and it didn't miss a show till the last one where he fell ill. 34 years of shows without missing one.
I watched them every Sunday when
I did
as a kid. As a kid, I would always watch. Question.
And I have to mention, this is why we do this. What we do. This is he was my inspiration for this roundtable style show. Although I'm not as what would you call him? Flinty is.
He had a style.
Wrong. Yeah. Wrong. He had no style. Wrong.
Imagine Twit if you just went around the table and said, no, that's no. Wrong. Megan. No. No. Jason.
But I loved that. I loved that style. And I tried to do that at first, but it's just not me. I can't be like that. But I really do love that style.
We have another Jesuit you might have heard of.
Who's that?
The governor of California.
Jerry Brown.
He was a Jesuit.
He went to the seminary. He never got ordained.
He was
right?
Never ordained.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
We have a couple.
There's a few.
They're agents everywhere.
See, you don't say that because then now, see, people are going to conspiracy theory it. And,
wait, hold on. They're going to cut this frame out right now. The Jesuits are everywhere.
No, that's going to get to the Pope and you're going to be in trouble. Stop it. Knock it off. No, we love him. Father Robert Balassare really represents the order very well and is a great host on Twitter. We'll miss you for that month. Come back quickly.
Back.
Also with us, of course, Megan Maroney, one of my oldest, dearest friends, all the way back to Tech TV and the Screensavers, and now host of Tech News Today with Jason every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC. You missed a day on Friday, right?
No, we did the show. We just did it early. No, we don't. We're like the McLaughlin group.
Early.
We
you
don't
miss
a show.
Nice.
No, we don't. And my order, I'll also be gone for a month. My order goes to Hawaii once every 4 years,
nice.
And you pay for it.
Yes, that's good. And you elect a new leader.
Yeah, a new leader of my secret order.
I like that. I like that. iOS
I'll
today as well.
I want an order that takes me to Hawaii too.
Actually, you and I will be back here sitting over on the new living room set. It'll be a little rough. It's not quite done, although we do have the bricks and the arch have been put in. The windows are almost done for our new set, and we'll do that tomorrow. And you can tune in for TNT tomorrow as well. We're going to do all the shows. It might be a little rocky at first, a little rough. Might not look as polished as it will be, but I think it's functional.
And okay, most people just listen anyway.
Yeah, that's what I keep saying. just listen anyway. Our show today brought to you, well, if they were paying attention, they would notice that many of you, except Alex, have excellent, clean-shaven faces.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes. Well done, Megan. Well done. That's thanks to Harry's. Actually, I don't know. Do you use Harry's? Lisa loves her Harry's. She really likes it. Harry's is they sell to men, the great shave every man deserves. But there's no reason why a woman couldn't use it as well. You know how razor companies are always changing the handle, putting out new models. Oh, look, we've had a 17th blade. Well, and of course, they raise the price each time. Harry's does not believe in doing that. They completely improve their razors all the time. The price has never changed, about half the price of what you'd pay for that expensive Gillette blade at a drugstore, just $2 a blade. And now they've really improved these. The handles are new, the soft texture, but I think we should also talk about the new features in the blade itself. They'd have a softer flex hinge for a more comfortable glide. And this was something I really wondered about. You know, the very expensive drugstore blades have that extra blade at the top, the sixth blade there, for getting it, you know, under the nose or the hard to reach places. Anyway, Harry's has it now, if that's something you care about.
Nice.
That sixth blade. They have a lubricating strip, of course, and they have the textured handle for more control when it's wet. This is the new Harry's handle. And if you are new to Harry's, you can get this for a reduced price. Harry's was founded by two friends who wanted to offer great shaves at a fair price. And they did the smartest thing I can imagine. They actually bought the factory that makes the blades in Germany, one of two big blade factories. They bought it. And that way they're selling, it's really factory direct to you. They're selling you the blades they make and designed for performance and quality, and they sell them for half the price. Quality always 100% guaranteed, and if you don't, you'll love your shave. Harry's will fully refund you. The way you start, though, is with a kit. You need the weighted razor handle of your choice, and these Harry's kits are really a great deal. You get the razor, three blades, you get the travel cover, and you get a full-size bottle of the shaving foam. This is the shave gel, the foaming shave gel. They also have a cream. I kind of like the cream. That's what I use. But you get to pick, and you pay no more than $15 for this. This is the Truman set. If you want a metal handle, they have the new grippy metal handles. They're beautiful. The new Winston set, that's $10 more. But in both cases, we've got a special limited time offer for you. If you go to harrys.com/twit, you'll get $5 off your first purchase. So that means $10 for that to get started with the Harry's kit. And then you get your subscription and you'll get the foaming shave gel and the blades delivered right to you at a very, very, very fair cost. Every month or every 2 months, depending on what you need. Harry's, harrys.com/twit. Go there right now. Get $5 off your first purchase. We love them. We use them. That's the best testimony of all. And we invite you to try them yourself. And we thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech, our first show from the new East Side. It's going to take a while to get used to saying the East Side Studio. I made that name up. Mostly because I wanted to play Moving On Up to the East Side. And then I realized the next line was to what, a deluxe apartment in the sky?
Hmm.
And I thought, that's not really what I think of this as, a deluxe apartment in the sky.
Could we just call it Tess, like the East Side Studio? Tess.
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 Oh, I like that.
Ooh.
Tess. That's better. I like that. It's personified.
I don't like saying I'm going to be in Tess for the next 8 hours.
Oh, jeez.
That's going to get me in.
Oh, no, never mind. You could say East Side Studios. Yeah, you could say East Side, Studios.
Earmuffs, everyone. Earmuffs.
My son is a student at CU Boulder. He's going to get to try this new wireless broadband network that Google is launching. Wireless. So Google made a lot of noise with their gigabit broadband that they're offering in very limited cities, and never did quite make it to Petaluma. Remember the competition? We worked on it. We tried to get it, put it in here. Thanks to SonicNet, I'm okay. Because what do we have here? 20 gigabits? 10, 20 gigabits? We have fiber in here. 10, is it 10 or 20?
10.
10 gigabits symmetric. Frankly, past 4 or 5 gigabits, you don't really notice the difference. But it's really nice to have that kind of speed. Thank you, SonicNet, for that. But Google is going to start rolling out wireless. And I think this is kind of key to getting to the next level. Google's realized, as Verizon did, it's very expensive to put fiber in there. $500 a foot, something like that.
Well, I think a lot of the problems with the rollout for a lot of the locations is that they had to have cities that had the right ownership of right-of-ways.
Right.
Ownership,
you know, so very hard to do.
Like, so there was incredible amounts of red tape, and a lot, and obviously the wireless is still challenging because now you're negotiating is where do you put the transmitters.
Right. But a lot easier than
digging. Yeah, absolutely.
They started in Kansas City. They went to Provo. They're in Austin. But according to a recent Wall Street Journal, it was just a story. It was just too. It was really expensive, and the company now wants to find a better way, either lease existing networks or go wireless. So they're doing a trial in 24 U.S. cities. Boulder will be the first. So I think that's exciting. That's really really good news.
They've been playing with this tech for a while. So
is it now? So I wanted to ask: is this 5G? We talked about 5G last week, and I got very excited about it.
So if it's like the technology that they tested in San Francisco last year, it actually uses three different sets of radios. So you have a lower frequency radio to do the long haul. That's going to transfer massive amounts of data, connect the towers with each other. Then there's a micro mesh at 433 megahertz that connects blocks. And then you get down to more ISM, 2.4.
So it's not Wi-Fi, but it's Wi-Fi-like?
It's Wi-Fi. Like the last link is Wi-Fi.
Okay.
But
so they have a microwave link at the higher, to the head end or to whatever the root places, and then Wi-Fi from that.
Which works, and the technology was proven to be able to do a very nice mesh, but the problem is you're just running into fundamentals of physics here. There's only so much RF energy you can pump into the air before it becomes saturated, and it's not like a cable where you can saturate that cable and it won't affect anything else. If you start saturating RF bands, it's going to affect everything in the air.
Right.
Well, and also there's this will have different challenges in different cities, because there's a lot of cities that have an RF component that is very complex, like San Francisco being one of them, where there's just, I know when we work with a lot of the electronics that we have, it's very noisy. Yeah. There's a lot of traffic already there.
Right.
And so it will work in at different levels.
There's also the legal issue, because thanks to people like Comcast and Verizon, many states have laws against municipal Wi-Fi.
I think this gets around a lot of that, because Google's actually is actually the service
provider. It's a commercial operator.
The city is not paying Google to put that in as a service.
That's important. And that's important.
It is.
It's like, hey, you didn't pay us. We're doing this on our own, right? Although the city obviously would love this, right? It's a good thing for a city to have high-speed internet.
And this is all that's left, because the FCC just got shut down. They just lost a higher court ruling on municipal fiber networks, which is ridiculous, because we're talking about cities where Verizon, AT&T, et cetera, they don't want to come in. There's not enough there for them to make money. But
or outlining areas outside of where municipal Wi-Fi is already offered.
Reminds me a little story of a dog in a manger. I remember reading about some time ago. I don't know why I'm looking at you.
You remember that story, right?
Remember that story? Okay. Is that in the Bible, or that's just a story we tell after the fact? I don't think
that
the dog's actually in
the Bible.
That's the one I read. That's the one.
They said, there's not going to be any internet access at this manger. I'm just telling you. I know you want to tweet.
I'm here. You're not.
But I'm just saying.
Get at it.
OMG, the savior of the world is here.
At least you can tweet it. Well, maybe not. Twitter is a honeypot for a-holes, according to BuzzFeed. And then Time Magazine just published a cover story on trolls. I love the story, because it said, writing this story is like putting out a pan of baklava for bears. It is not the right thing to do, but sometimes we just have to talk about trolling. This BuzzFeed article we talked about last week really kind of, I think, opened the lid on the issues going on with Twitter. I don't know why I brought it up.
Because there's a new filter. They have a new filter.
Oh, the filters. Yeah.
New
That's
way
right.
to.
So tell me about that. I don't know.
So it rolled out on iPhone on a Friday or Thursday or Friday. It makes it easier for you to control your settings. You can also just not see people that you don't follow.
You have to use that in the Twitter, official Twitter app, right?
Yes.
On iOS.
Yeah. Okay. So you can control it so that you don't see any of this stuff.
So what do you say? Well, I don't have it on Android yet. What does the setting say?
I don't think that I updated yet. I don't want to use it. Like, I want to hear from everyone. Like,
it was the quality filter, which apparently verified users have had for.
I've had the quality filter.
And it's a rolling out of the quality
filter. And I don't use it, because when I turn it on, I don't see anything.
Yeah.
I get three tweets. It's nothing. Everybody. I don't know if that's a statement about the quality of Twitter or just. But it does. See, part of my problem is, I want to know if there's abuse and harassment going on, right?
Me too.
At the same time, I like others, I get on Twitter and I feel like my life is going downhill. I just get depressed. What should I do about that?
I like to mute people so that they can continue to yell.
And they don't know.
And they have no idea.
Problem is, it's only muted for you. Everybody else is seeing that.
But, I mean, most of the accounts, the troll accounts, they have no followers. Or they have, like, they have 14 followers, all of which are their
them. Yeah, they're sock
so
puppets.
So they can yell to themselves as much as they want. If they make them feel better, great. I see that as outreach to the poor.
I think this is such a personal thing. I mean, everyone has their own experience on Twitter, and, you know, my experience is different than other people's experience. I wouldn't say, like, you know, for anyone to not use these, but for me, like, I just don't experience that much hatred. I don't experience violence or threats or anything like that. And so I want to see when people disagree with me. I want to see.
Yeah, that I want to see. So, that's the problem, is it's very hard to titrate that. Mm-hmm. Well, is that abuse or just somebody who says, you're wrong, you're full of it?
It doesn't always feel great, but, you know,
but
it's
I
part
wanna
of business,
see that.
Right?
Yeah, I want to be correct.
Well, I don't think that the problem with Twitter and the problem with trolling is really us filtering what's coming to us. It is how it's going through the entire ecosystem and affecting. I mean, I guess.
But you Google it, you find it. I mean, it's there.
It's just it is a.
Oh, the world in general.
Yeah. There's just the echo chamber that it builds quickly. You know, of you know, and admittedly, you look at Twitter, like, if I'm upset, you know,
it's a great place.
I don't do it on Facebook, so it's funny. Right. You know, right. There's different, like on Facebook,
different tools for.
I use Facebook and I'm talking about cool things and I'm doing this stuff. But and Twitter, I also talk about things that I think are cool or things that I want to announce or things that I, you know, whatever. But definitely the place that as my daughter would say, I think I said this on another show, but as my daughter would say, you know, fear leads to anger leads to hate, hate leads to Twitter. You know. And
your 7-year-old said that?
No, my 21-year-old said that. Yeah,
that's so true though, right?
Twitter's the if you're mad, but if you have enough, if you build up enough followers, you do get to a point where you're like, really, you're not going to give me a seat on that plane. You know, I had a seat on that plane, and you just took it away, and then you're like, you tweet, dear United, and then next thing you know,
I hate doing
that. I've done it like twice.
I've been so tempted to do that.
I've done it twice, and it was like I had a $60,000 camera, and that they were not going to let me carry on.
Yeah.
I knew that I had spent.
Did you get some satisfaction by tweeting it?
Oh, yeah.
Was it this one? Because I wouldn't let you carry that.
No, no.
It looks like
it really does look like something.
It looks like a bomb.
You should see it. You should see it in the X-ray.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, those little lenses, they all look like little springs going back into a center thing.
It's like a dirty bomb.
Excuse me, sir. Is that an atomic bomb or a hydrogen bomb?
Because we do carry those on. And every time you go through TSA, they're like, excuse me, sir, I need to open that. Because they just want to see it. Yeah. You know, they have this whole thing like I've never seen
one of those. What could that be? They've never seen anything like it.
But it doesn't, it doesn't look bad other than it looks very complex with a whole bunch of things pointed at a center unit, which makes
I feel like I need a lightsaber to train with.
Oh, yeah, it's like that orb.
Oh, my goodness.
It is. Put your helmet on. Let's see how you do. Put your blast helmet on, Luke. No.
Okay, wait. Devil's advocate, because there's going to be people who listen to any discussion about trolls, Twitter, wherever it might be, and they're going to say, why not just ignore? Why not just block them? Why not grow thicker skin? So.
Right.
How do you answer that?
Well, here's the problem. We do a lot of events that have a lot of viewers on things like YouTube and so on and so forth. And what happens is all those trolls basically make the entire comment system useless. Awesome. It's just completely so.
That's true, isn't it?
And that's why publications like NPR
just turned off their comments,
getting rid of all their comments because it's toxic.
Yeah, and that's why, for instance, we spend a lot of time building tools that let us basically. And we actually learned how to, the Hazu stuff that we did, the question and answer system.
You created a place where trolls could come just to learn how to block them.
Yeah. Well, and Twit turned out to be a great lab.
I'm a pioneer in trolling. Yeah. In fact, we turned off our comments 10 years ago.
But we learned there's better ways to do it. I mean, the big thing is that what, and I think YouTube started going down that way, and then everyone got upset. It's as soon as you know who people are, like when we started the Pixel Core, 10 or 15 years ago, one of the first things we did is everyone has their own photo, everyone has their own name.
To be said for verification.
As soon as you do that, suddenly it was like
people are much nicer.
There was very little. It was always within a tempered level. It's the anonymous nature of it. Now it doesn't mean the anonymous nature shouldn't exist. You want to be able to have people say what needs to be said anonymously, but on a general process. And I think that we're going to see organizations find ways to. Tighten, and a lot of that has to do with if you're going to come back to my channel over and over again, I can start saying, I've decided you're a bad actor, and we're not going to listen to you, you don't want to be like you ignore it. You want at a channel level, you want to say, I'm going to flag these folks and no one can see them on my channel.
Because it was on this, show that a couple of weeks ago that Jason Calacanis said that he had heard inside story that Twitter was going to roll out verification for everybody. Right now, it's only for celebrities, movers and shakers, people like that.
I just got it.
Did you?
I just
congratulations.
I'm verified.
I think if they rolled
it out. I did not.
No, Jason and I are still certifiable. Part of the
you're one of 187,000. There aren't very many.
Apparently. Yeah, yeah.
And I think if they rolled that out and let everybody verify, not any criterion about who gets to verify, but just make it every. Then reasonably, a filter would make sense. Then you turn on the filter I only want to see people who are willing to stand behind their comments with their own name. Then that's different, I think. That's a different
experience. Just wonder how Twitter has... Okay, so because we've been talking about this whole Twitter troll problem for
forever.
Years.
Since Twitter began.
And so obviously it's a long-term thing that Twitter is grappling with. How did this filter exist and it was really only kept for a very small percentage of people? I understand the application of it for someone who has millions of followers and everything. It might be a little bit better used in that scenario. But when it comes to your users who are exposed to certain action from people, like I feel like any any way to be able to control
would
that
be nice.
Would be nice. Yeah. Just, I'm surprised that it took them a year and a half since the point of creation of this tool to
roll out. Well, that article is about, like, they're just disorganized in this sense. They don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're not, they're primarily male, which maybe they're not experiencing the same kind of harassment. So, yeah, that was what the article said, essentially. But I also just think it's personal. Like, I'm not saying I don't block or mute people. I sometimes do. But, you know, it's my choice. And I like having that choice.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that I think there's a lot of sensitivity to also having large numbers of people leave your service because they're upset that you know, they don't care. Even if it was a 20 million trolls that left, the newspaper is just going to say 20 million people or 50 million people have left Twitter, you know, and everyone is so concerned in these social networks of any kind of losing any ground of the number of active users that you know, I can see why they would hide that for a long time and only have those tools to, you know, for certain people because they don't want to, they're afraid of getting the reaction that YouTube got. You know, YouTube mm-hmm. decided we're going to make everybody use their G+ account. It wasn't to push G+ as much as it was to make, well, I think, to make YouTube more usable, and you know, the YouTube community. And so the problem is you also have a culture of what people expect you to do, and this is why they joined, and, mm-hmm. and there's this, you know, whether you agreed to that or not, because you've let it go for that long.
There's also a pendulum here, because not all trollish behavior is what we would consider trolling. There's nothing wrong about being a provocateur, about throwing out a question every once in a while to get people talking. That's how you get good conversations.
That's what I do.
Yeah, rather than an echo chamber.
Right.
Well, I think we made a mistake as the Digitarati calling it trolling. You call it what it is. It's stalking. You're getting stalked. You're getting bullied.
Well, there's
online.
Different. There's bullying. There's stalking. There's abusive. There's hate. There's a lot of.
Yeah.
And there's as many different kinds of trolling as there are trolls.
And that pendulum's just going to keep going back and forth. We're going to get too tight, and then they're going to, we're going to loosen it up because we've been too restrictive, and it will get too loose and go back and forth and back and forth. That's not Twitter. That's not Facebook. That's conversations throughout the history of mankind.
There is a criticism, though, here of Twitter, and you kind of alluded to it in a way. They've had this for a year and a half for celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter's not any different than Facebook or, frankly, any other business where celebrities get treated very differently.
Yeah, and you see that not only with the verified profiles and the tools, the special privileges of being verified, you also see it with their video platform. They're very
right.
They have stars. Twitter has
There's
stars
a special
in their eyes.
Twitter
they want to be
app.
Really special when
There's
it comes to celebrity
Twitter, yeah.
and entertainment and sports and all this kind of stuff. That's very validating to Twitter as a company.
Well, Twitter and Facebook have apps for celebrities to use that are better. They don't have ads. They're better than the other apps.
Well, and I think that also, I think Twitter in many ways lost its soul when it decided it was going to suddenly promote, like years ago, you know, when the highest
suggested user list.
When they started doing the suggested user and they started pushing all these stars, I think that they really lost this groundswell. If you look at YouTube, for instance, YouTube has a whole set of celebrities that the mainstream doesn't even know exist.
You're right. If YouTube had tried to pick winners, it would have failed miserably.
Mm-hmm. Miserably, you know, because then they're just more of the same.
Yeah.
But what YouTube did really well was that they basically just let these stars build up and they helped build them up. And it's hard when we explain, like, we talk to people about doing their events. You know, we're doing these live events and we always go, yeah, so bringing someone in from Hollywood is not particularly useful. Like, just so you know, like if you're doing a live stream, what you want are Twitter and YouTube stars, and really the YouTube stars. Like that's what's going to get you viewers.
Look at VidCon. VidCon was loaded with people I've never heard of who had screaming fans.
Yeah.
I mean, Justine has to go around with her bodyguards. You know what I mean? Like, you know, but the mainstream has seen, you know, Justine Ezrick pop up every once in a while.
Right.
But
most
world,
people have no idea who I Justine is.
Right.
But obviously, in her world, she's huge.
Yeah.
She's as big as Beyonce.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's, but we always try to explain to people, like, that is, that. But
it always baffles
gave
me,
up.
Too, because if from somebody like me, from an old school media point of view, what I see those people do, I don't understand why they're celebrities. What makes them so, I mean, it's not the traditional definition of celebrity that we have, or of, you know, I mean, that we're not talking Johnny Carson here. We're not talking Jerry Lewis here.
They're in that vertical that they're in. They serve that vertical. My son,
it's a very specific niche.
My 8-year-old son watches Minecraft. If I let him go, he'll watch, you know, hours of someone sitting there playing Minecraft.
It's the new stardom. The old stardom was, I look at someone, I say, you are someone I will never be, and it's amazing I get to see part of your life. The new stardom is, this person's like me. This person has the same interest as me. He does the same thing that I do every day. And I like it.
In fact, as PewDiePie has gotten more successful, he's kind of being more rejected by his fans. Oh, you sold out. You became Hollywood.
Well, and I think that the other thing, from the interactions that we've had with for instance, YouTube stars, they're not nearly as much like everyone thinks. That, I mean, they come across that way and everything else, but these are folks that are very organized.
And
they
work
work very hard, and they like when they tweet, when they post, how they post, what they say. All the
Justine's a good example. She knows exactly what she's doing. She's very, very smart about how she's doing it.
Well, OMD Chad, great example. I mean, because his persona online is he's kind of disheveled and he's random.
Far
from everything
it.
Is so right. planned. When he tweets, all of his content, when he creates it, who he's hired to do the production, and so. He's doing a persona.
Is that shared? Love. Is that lore and knowledge shared between these people? How do they learn this?
VidCon. Like they said, they sit up there on panels and they talk about how they do that stuff. And YouTube does a pretty good job.
So you could go to somewhere like that and study it and say, I want to be this person here. Look, it's one thing to say, if I practice shooting a lot, I'll be an NBA star. There's a lot that goes into becoming an NBA star. Is it like that?
In the same way that it's not just practice. What is the vertical that you're going to serve that is going to be different than something that everybody else is doing? There's room for a handful of them, but there's only so many people that are going to be superstars.
Opening candy, opening toys.
Yeah, that's
my
the thing.
Vertical.
It feels like their verticals are being invented that we didn't even know existed.
Huge.
They're being invented as we go. Like who knew that opening toys would be a thing? No one knew until
you
started
doing
that,
Megan? You should be opening toys every week.
Exactly. Well, there aren't the same gatekeepers, right? I mean, these kids are deciding what they want to see, and there's so much of it. So your kids watch different things than your kids that watch different things than your kids and my kids and, you know, the kids that you work with. And so, you know, it's just we don't know. There's so much. And so and also it's a lot of luck. I think you can do everything right and not be lucky, too. Like you're in the right place in the right time, that sort of thing. But it's not the same. It's not the old media where, like, there were a bunch of old guys in a room that were like, what can we make for kids that we can put ads on? That's just not what it is anymore.
Well, and it's just these random, you know, I couldn't believe it. I wanted to show someone. I didn't want to try to explain it. I was just like, oh, just go watch a movie on how to solder an XLR cable.
And then
we'll sit down
on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh no, there's whole pages of it. And there's pages of guys doing it in different techniques and the process. And some are better video, and some of them are like hundreds of thousands of people have watched this video on how to do an XLR. But that's the kind of thing is that, and that's the power of. I mean, I don't know, not to be too willing, but that's the power of the internet is that you can have these niches that are no longer a local niche of what happens in Petaluma. It's a niche of there is 100,000 people spread around the world that are interested in,
The world's a big place. There are 1.5 billion people on the internet. And so it doesn't, there's going to be more niches.
Get a lot of coalitions.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah,
it's cool. the other side of the Twitter thing, the other side of the YouTube's comment thing is, it's democratizing. That means all people get a chance to talk. Some of them are annoying. Some of them are the next, big thing.
But it's also, it is what's changing, how we look at law enforcement, for instance. I mean, I think that's a hard conversation. But, Will Smith, I think, said it best where he goes, it's not that law enforcement got any worse. It just started getting filmed.
Right.
And so the fact that we, it's been the same. And I think that the thing that, we're starting to see now with, we start to see movies, but we're going to see probably in the next 2 years a feedback loop where you see, a live stream that creates a crowd reaction that feeds into the live stream. Something's happening on this corner in Petaluma. People watch it live and go do something about it while it's still streaming.
Wow.
And I think that's
scary.
That's within the next 2 years. I think we're going to start seeing these feedback loops of because people have the ability to stream from their phones.
Right.
That kind of stuff is going to happen. And I think that it's going to change a lot.
I've also wondered why there's not like the I've been stopped by a police officer app where you push one button, and it automatically starts recording and sending to the cloud.
The ACLU makes it.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Wait, really?
Yeah. So it's an ACLU app. I don't think it's actually called I've Been Stopped by a Police Officer, but it's the same idea. It immediately starts streaming, starts recording, and it's illegal in some states. But
it's illegal? Oh, because you're filming a police officer.
In some states, not all. Most states, it's not. Let's take a break. We're going to do a live week ahead, so prepare your script.
Okay.
Get the teleprompters ready. I don't know what you do for that, but we'll get that ready
Magic.
In a second. before we do. Do we have a promo for this week, Carson? All right. Let's see what happened. It was a big week.
Previously on Twit.
Oh, my goodness. This is the last new screensavers from the beautiful Brick House Studios. In fact, as we record this, the movers have arrived. We're going to start taking stuff out of here.
Today on Know How.
Well, bye-bye.
The new screensavers.
I'm here at Rancho Obi-Wan with the CEO of the ranch, Mr. Steve Sansweet. How long has it taken you to collect everything that's in here?
Star Wars just celebrated its 39th anniversary, but I've been collecting for over 40 years.
Oh, wait a minute. The raccoon. He's leaving. He's got his, he packed his bindle, and he's about to leave.
Security Now.
The massive misreporting across the entire industry of this Microsoft Secure Boot Golden Key.
Oh.
That did not happen.
Oh.
They used the term Golden Key, and because their write-up was itself very confusing and dense, what this actually was an implementation design error. That's all that is. There's no key involved.
All right, close the door. And for the last time, say goodbye. Here we go. Let's get on the cable car. We got a ride.
Wow, you got this in fast.
Yeah.
Nice job. Our editors work fast.
We're going to cut the ribbon and for
those
the
are
first
working
time
scissors, by the way.
Those are East Side Studios.
Oh, they'll kill you.
All right.
Twit. Broadcasting from the capital of the free world, Petaluma, California.
By the way, I want to. Yeah, that was nice. Our editors worked fast because that was stuff. Some
that
of that
like
was
5 minutes ago,
just a minute ago. I do want to give a lot of kudos to Steve Gibson because everywhere in the media, and we reported it too.
I reported it.
We talked about that Microsoft Golden Key, and I got fooled because, you know, I tried to read the text, and you know, it was jiggling around a bit, but it looked like there was a bunch of hexadecimal code in there that was a key. He read it closely and paid attention and, more importantly, understood it and said, that's not exactly what happened at all. Well, I think we were, and the media in general, was so anxious to find a story about why having a golden key is a bad idea so that we could spank the NSA and the FBI and members of Congress who want us to have a backdoor key, that we wanted that story to be the case. It wasn't. It had nothing to do with a golden key. It was an error in implementation on Microsoft's part. Didn't really affect people as badly as it might have, and I'm sure they will fix it at some point, but although difficult to fix because it breaks a lot of software if they do fix it. Anyway, if you want to know the details, I doubt very much you'll see articles on the internet starting tomorrow saying, oh, it wasn't a golden key, but if you want to know the details, you can listen to Steve's Security Now from Wednesday because he does talk about what it really was and what it really means, as opposed to what we thought. And I include myself in this, what we thought it was. We've got a great week ahead planned for you in the brand-new East Side Studios. Megan Maroney, what are you going to be covering this week?
Well, hopefully Nougat will come out.
Nougat?
It's called,
have we decided?
Nougat. I call it Nougat. I don't let anyone call it Nougat.
I go back and forth because it's fun to Nougat be undecided.
Yeah. And so when Nougat came out, that was when Jason and I were going to switch phones, and he was going to try a couple apps on iOS.
We'll figure that out. So, I'm going to bring you my iPhone. And you're going to be using my iPhone 6S Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll wipe it for you.
Okay.
Clean off the fingerprints.
I'll use one of those mirrored.
Which one?
Android
you want
phones.
To try the Note?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You're willing to be like, I don't want to go back to my iPhone?
I'm willing to try.
Are you willing to say, oh, I don't want to go back to Android? That would kind of ruin your.
It's really difficult to do that because I do so much with Android for my job.
I'll be using a BlackBerry.
Yeah, and we're going to make him use a BlackBerry. Yeah, I got a passport.
Alex, you got a Windows phone.
Excellent.
I'm ready.
Burn.
Well, of course, Gawker's going to shut down this week. You know, some are mourning it. We had a great interview last week with Willa Remus about that. Good reasons to mourn it. Good, you know, there still needs to be gatekeepers for the tech elite, people who are willing to speak honestly about them. And I'm sure there will. Like, a lot of those people are going to other places in Gawker. LifeStage launches this week. That's a Facebook app, but you don't have to have a Facebook account. It was created by Michael Saman. He's a 19-year-old product guy from Facebook, has a great background. Definitely recommend looking into him if you're a young app developer. It's for only people 21 and younger. So you can use it if you're 22, but you can't see any of the other people's stuff. So it's people to try to get people, you know, hooked into the Facebook atmosphere. So, but you don't have to have a Facebook account, which anyone, you know, most 21-year-olds and under are not interested in Facebook. So check out that. Friday is Pluto is Not a Planet Day, 2006.
How dare they have a day for that?
That was when Pluto was still demoted, bitter. Of course, from planet to dwarf planet. Mm. And also this week in 1991, August 23rd, Tim Berners-Lee opened the World Wide Web to new users. So it was publicly available in August 6th, but new users were allowed to come in 1991, August 23rd. And there are some security conferences this week. Cybersecurity for Critical Infrastructure in Exchange in San Diego. Energy Sec 2016 in Anaheim, and the Cybersecurity Summit in Chicago. So
wow, that, you got a lot of stuff.
August is like security month, security mayhem month.
We had a huge DEF CON reveal last week, and now new stuff will be coming. Thank you, Megan Maroney. That's TNT, Monday through Friday. Back to its time of 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC from the brand new Eastside Studios tomorrow.
Right.
Tomorrow.
That's right.
Right.
I do want to talk about that Gawker story. I also want to talk about the NSA's equation group and what that leak meant. But first, let's talk about this. This is, I'm so excited. I just got the new automatic. Did you know they have a new one?
I know.
It's exciting. Nice. So we've talked about automatic before. This goes on the OBD2 port of your car. Every car since 96 has one. You may not even know it. It's right below your steering wheel. It looks like the kind of thing, well, oh, yeah, that's the dealership. They're going to plug in a machine to that. But you can plug the automatic into it and get the kind of information that previously has only been available to a dealer. The automatic will give you things like, well, that's what this is what that check engine light means. It pairs to your phone via Bluetooth. You can get all sorts of information about how much gas you're using, what your fuel efficiency is, if you're a good driver. I get a score as I drive with my automatic. And this is cool. The new one, the Automatic Pro, and by the way, it's not just a few bucks more, which is really great. It is a little heavier because inside of here, I feel it, there's a 3G radio in here and no monthly fees or subscription for 5 years. So this automatic now is on the internet, which gives it a huge range of things it can do. For instance, you'll always know where your vehicle is parked at any time, or put this in your car and you can track your vehicle even when you're not with it. So when Annabella starts driving in a couple of years, you put this in the car and you can have even geofencing because it'll know exactly where she is. Mm-hmm. And you could say, Annabella, you're not allowed to go outside city limits, or you're not allowed to go to the highway. And you can actually look on your phone. You'll be able to see where she is. It works with If This Then That, which means you can have it hooked up and do all sorts of things. I have it hooked up with my Amazon Echo. I can say how much gas is left in the car, and it'll tell me. It doesn't do that with a Tesla because there's no gas. But it does do that with your automobile that uses petrol, as they say. You can link it to your Nest thermostat, so as you drive home, it'll turn the heat up or the air conditioning on. You can even ask Alexa, where did I park my car? Oh, I'm sorry. A lot of people are just going to know. But see, if you had this, and you even could get human help in a crash, the Automatic Pro detects severe accidents and calls the train responders for you, even if you cannot. This is awesome. Every car since 1996 has an OBD2 port. Not every car yet has an Automatic Pro, but it's my goal to get every car in the nation with one of these. Normally, it's $129.95, which I think is a great price. And by the way, no subscription fee. You don't pay for the internet connectivity. But use our exclusive offer, TWIT. You'll get $20 off. So now it's pretty much back to the price of the original Automatic. That's a really good deal. Get all these new features basically almost for free. Visit automatic.com/TWIT for more information. And don't forget, if you want to get $20 off, use the offer code TWIT at checkout. The brand new Automatic Pro 3G car adapter. This is huge. Real-time driving location alone, the crash alert, that's going to be fantastic. You're watching a TWIT from our brand new Eastside Studios. We really want to thank the live audience that came out to help us celebrate. We seem to have a few bottles of champagne and some cupcakes and things. I hope you will partake. Feel free. And if you want to be here and visit us in the studio, just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure you can come in. We're going to maintain our open studio policy. I was thinking about that. We didn't do that in the cottage, did we? There was no room for an audience.
You couldn't have. Where would you put them, in the host chair?
Sometimes people came in occasionally.
And they'd peek in the door, or maybe sit in a corner.
Sit in a corner. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that a few times.
It was hard though because there was no room for it. So I think that this the having a studio audience really started with a Brick House.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I hadn't really. It feels like we've always had
like stadium seating, like little stands.
We used to have that. Remember the screensavers? Yeah. They built a little bleachers.
You know, they have little ones you can pull out and then just pull them out.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. We have plenty of room for a studio audience, so that's nice. So we look forward to seeing you. People are asking about the bricks. I don't know where they're going to go, but I think we're going to go line the hall with them. Because this wall on the studio here, as you come in the door, be a perfect place. You'd see your brick as you came.
Yeah, it's all white right now, so
yeah.
It's just a nice place to put some texture.
And you know what I really want to do? Patrick Delahanty had this idea, and I'm going to figure out a way to do this. The other wall on the other side also, this long, it's weird. It's a long hall, and everything comes off of that hall, right, including the studio. He wants to put a timeline, a twit timeline along that. Like, you know, when you go to a museum and you see first there were the birds and the dinosaurs and the rodents. And so we want to make like a timeline. We'd have all the hosts when they started their shows. We'd have pictures of the hosts. Somebody else said, you know, you said this. We could get monitors and have little videos.
Like the Harry Potter picture frames.
Yeah. We could. I think this would be really fun. So we're going to figure out a way to. It might take a while for us to do, but put a timeline down the wall there. Kind of the history of Twit and all the shows we've launched. It's been 11 years. It's not as long as the dinosaurs, but sometimes I feel like one. The comet could be coming any time now. So let's talk about this. This is probably going to be a Steve Gibson subject. I think we talked a little bit about it on Wednesday, but more news keeps coming out. It was revealed by a security group that NSA tools, older tools, but nonetheless tools, they had somehow hacked into the NSA and got tools from the Equation Group. WikiLeaks says they're going to publish these tools. There was some question, the shadow brokers who published two chunks of data, they say one was open to all, and the other they're going to sell for the highest bidder, at least $1 million. WikiLeaks says they already have the files for auction. We'll publish them in due course. The questions, of course, several questions come up when you read this story. First of all, are these really legitimate NSA hacking tools? Second of all, how dangerous are these tools? Can they actually, you know, if hackers got a hold of them, if some hacking group spent $1 million and got a hold of them, would that mean the end of security? Would this be a big deal? Finally, who are the shadow brokers and how did they get them? You know, that's a big question, right? Because if the NSA is getting hacked, that's a little scary. That's a little worrisome. Well, we know the answer to the first question now. I think we do, because the stuff they've released so far jibes well with previously unreleased documents from the Edward Snowden Hall. The Intercept released these documents, and at least initial comparisons show. There is some debate over this, that these are, in fact, legitimate. These are the NSA tools that Snowden had information about, that they match. The second question is a little more difficult to tell how dangerous these are. So far, what we see requires that you have access. It's a flaw in an older form of Cisco router, the PIX routers, PIX operating system, that has been patched. PIX has been obsoleted for about 7 years, I think. So they're older routers. Most of them have been patched. If not, then you should probably get a new Cisco router. And to fully use these exploits, things like breaking into VPN, in general, it sounds like you need to have access already to the internal network.
These are infrastructure tools.
Yeah. So once you're already in, you can use these then to get more information.
I mean, it sounds really bad that, oh, there's a hacking package out there, but those exist. We do. Those are legitimate, like
right.
Raphael Mudge and his penetration testing tools. Those are some of the most advanced tools on the planet. And yes, you could use them for bad things, but I think what the NSA tools gives us is they give us a peek into where the NSA may have their hooks into the Internet's infrastructure, because some of these tools access things that regular people don't see. They won't have access to.
Well, not only that, 7 years is not a long time for a router. Right. You know what right. I mean? So
no, there are a lot of PIX routers still in use.
And lots. Probably a lot of them that haven't been. I mean, how many people upgrade the firmware on their router? Right. I mean, you know, so right. I think that is that's the real challenge there. And, you know, and it wouldn't be hard to get physical access. So you can get a job as a, you know, maintenance guy. I mean, but this all, it's going to become more and more important for every company to be constantly paying attention to, you know, all of their hardware. You know, you can't just have it like, I'm just going to go down to Best Buy and buy, you know, some routers or whatever and just expect it to be anywhere near secure.
And also, the downside of a story like this is, yes, it's nice to bring people's attention to security. It's they start thinking, oh, I need some super hackery tool in order to get access to blah, 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 which is completely not true. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, Twit was at Black Hat, and we spoke with a security researcher who showed how trivial it was to break into 5 of the top 10 most popular home routers and small office routers that are out there. And these are firmwares that will never be patched.
Right.
No one ever patches their home router because security researchers have realized you don't need to own the big Cisco switch that's in the core of an enterprise. If I can own the home router that an executive uses to connect to the office, I have all the same access. And it took a whole lot less work. So while it's good that people are thinking about security, they're thinking in the wrong direction. It should be, okay, I need to make my place as secure as possible.
Well, and the problem is that executive is probably also writing their password down on a sticky and putting it on their monitor. not that I've ever seen that before.
Assuming, and it is still under discussion how real these are. I've seen stuff going back and forth both ways. Is the greater, I mean, and we know they're old. They're not going to be super dangerous, maybe a little dangerous. But the real question to me is what kind of security does the NSA have? It looks like the evidence is that all these files were stolen before 2013. So whoever got in had access then. But the NSA of all, this stuff should not be leaked out. That's the real question.
But they're field tools. So, I mean, it could have been as simple as some
USB key
idiot
somewhere?
Left a computer or a USB key and someone got it. It's, and this, you don't need to be on the NSA network in order to access these tools. So I'm pretty sure it's not like someone did a social engineering hack where they got into Langley and they figured out exactly where these super keys
right.
are held in a vault. It was probably just some low-level employee forgot his laptop.
What about the theory that it's a mole, that it's someone inside? Do you believe that?
Well, if that's true, the NSA is actually very good at finding that. So
yeah. There's some question that Dmitry Alperovich of CrowdStrike, knowing that the most recent file in this dump is from June 2013, surmised that the leakers were sitting on the information for years, waiting for the most opportune time to release it.
Why would it be now?
Yeah, what is this? Why is this
sitting
on
it
to time?
Well, it could be an opportunity because it's really much less useful. Like it could have been.
Ah.
Well, and I believe Snowden has said, at least on his Twitter account, that it's possible that the release now is a shot across the bow from, because some speculation has this, you know, pegged at like the Russians.
I think it's the Russians
getting access
with the
DNC. Hack and all that kind of stuff is kind of a shot across the bow to say, hey, check out what we've got. You want to bring it, we can bring it, you know. So it could move into that too.
Interesting. No surprise that the NSA has the Equation Group. These are the same kind of governmental operators that created Stuxnet. While I think there's a larger debate that I would love to see us have as a nation about how we want to participate in cyber warfare. We're very vulnerable. I mean, we're probably among the most vulnerable, if not the most vulnerable nations in the world, because we're highly technological. Our infrastructure is very highly technological, but it's older and it's not well secured. We know the grid, for instance, is really poorly secured. The people who operate our electric power companies all over they're all over the place. Some of them are private. Some of them are run by cities. Some of them are run by states. Some of them are like quasi public utilities. They all have different means of securing their data, some not very secure. Some of them are running Windows XP machines. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a checkerboard, and it's, according to the people I've talked to, very vulnerable. the NSA and others are trying to do the best they can to teach them better security strategies and to help them secure it. But this is a really a crazy quilt of companies. And, you know, we also know that if one power goes out in one area, it tends to cascade. And it, I think, would not be so hard to create, for instance, a devastating infrastructure attack on the United States. So should we be in this cyber warfare game where we are the most vulnerable? We need hackers, I guess. But isn't this, you know, opening up the door to hacks against us? Their hackers are as good as ours, I would say.
Well, I mean, right? it's a different... Most of the infrastructure that we have that's vulnerable in the United States is because of old generation SCADA devices. That's
right.
Supervisory control and data acquisition.
And guess what Stuxnet attacked?
Yeah. But those were never designed to be on a network. They weren't designed to be on the internet. And so you've got these people who are putting things like gas pumps onto the internet so that the home office can check to see how much gas it's pumped. Well, that's great, except the password is 1234 and you can't change it. It's hard coded.
Yeah, right.
And that's, you know, one example. You've got water plants where the valve controls are old SCADA devices from the 80s. We had an entire village at DEF CON where they took SCADA devices and they were able to reprogram to play Tetris. I mean, that's how open they are. So in that sense, yeah, we shouldn't be inviting. We're not holding a red flag out and saying people come attack us, but we do need to build up some homebrew capability to at least figure out where we're vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, defensive ability, in other words, as well as offense.
Well, there's no real defense for that.
Great.
Yeah, I think that it's, in general, I mean, this is a general question about how the United States projects its power, whether it's cyber warfare or real warfare or anything else. You know, it is always going to be not always positive. You know, and so it's not, you know, there's always going to be blowback from whatever we do in these areas. And I think that...
That shouldn't stop you from... Brian?
Well, it shouldn't stop us from interacting with it, but I mean, I think the Stuxnet is a could be very frightening about what it can and can't do as far as what they figured out how to do.
Right,
and it does open up a Pandora's box, you know, that we have to be careful of every time. And I think that
U.S. has never claimed responsibility for Stuxnet, but I think it's widely believed that it was the U.S. and Israel.
I mean, I don't know what.
In fact, it might have been the Equation Group, right? Dooku, Stuxnet.
I mean, what I heard is, I didn't look at it, but it's some of the most elegant code written.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a governmental actor.
Yeah. And so the
claim.
Yeah, and so I think that the problem you get into is that the people who are actually implementing these are more interested in the battle. I mean, they're in the middle of it, they're trying to solve it, and you do need to have someone step behind them going, okay, do we really want to open... And someone who actually... The problem really is that someone who's making the decision to give them the go... has to be someone that actually understands what go means.
It's and difficult. I think that so the diplomatic corps, which would normally make that decision, is completely unable to understand the technology.
I mean, it's like, oh yeah, it risks. Might slow the Iranians down, but it could invalidate the security of every USB device ever made. You saying, you know,
I have to watch Alex Gibney's Zero Day because they cover this in great detail and I hear it's very good. You were at DEF CON?
Yes.
Funny thing, before you arrived at DEF CON, there were eight GSM towers around the Bali and Paris hotels. Once DEF CON took off, there were 38 cell towers. All of a sudden, 30 more cell towers.
They were just, you know, they really wanted to make sure we could stay connected.
Yeah. So basically, these were all stingrays, right?
Well, it's scarier than that. So there was a security researcher by the name of...
By the way, you don't go to DEF CON and you assume that this is the case.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, we're not joking. When we tell people, turn everything off.
Yeah. Don't join any Wi-Fi networks.
No, don't...
Don't use your cell phone.
Put your cell phone in airplane mode, turn off Bluetooth, turn off...
Because a cell phone will automatically join one of these stingrays. It doesn't know the difference.
That's its job.
Yeah.
But there was a security researcher by the name of Jeffrey Vaughn who did a scan of the area around Paris and Bally's where DEF CON was held, DC-24. And he found eight towers.
Yeah.
On the day of the show, he did another scan. He found 38. Now, some of those could be the hotel turning on extra repeaters so that you get more service.
And I would like to say, if anyone who's gone to Las Vegas, they really do need 38.
They really do.
It wouldn't be a bad thing.
This is constant this, just shaking your phone.
But you know, some of them are probably government-sanctioned IMSI. Those are the dirt boxes, stingrays.
Well, you can, but a hacker can build a stingray.
That's the other problem, which is I could go down into the vendor area Right. Actually, not this year, because there were no software-defined radio vendors this year. But last year, I could have gone down and bought about $2,000 worth of gear and built my own Stingray in about 30 minutes.
Right.
So it's that technology is no longer in the realm of law enforcement anymore. Your neighbor can build a Stingray with instructions they find on the internet. That's, to me, it's scary, but at the same time, it's kind of cool.
A Stingray acts as a cell tower, captures your phone. Typically, will they pass that traffic on to the cell network?
Right. So the way it works...
So it's a man in the middle?
The phone. Your phone is actually pretty stupid about this. All it knows is it wants the best possible signal.
Right.
It will look for the strongest tower. So let's say I set up a Stingray in the room next to yours. Automatically, your phone will connect to my box, and my box will forward the traffic onto an actual cell tower. But I'm now a physical man in the middle attack.
Right.
So I, and because the phone is only encrypted between the phone and the tower, it trusts the tower. It's now unencrypted on my side. So I can see your texts. I can see.
Wow.
I can listen to your calls. I can see what sites you're visiting, what apps you're using. It's and it's actually pretty easy. They did a really good demonstration this year.
T-Mobile has announced there will be but one plan. One plan only, $70 a month, unlimited text, data, and voice, and that's that.
Oh yeah, no other asterisks.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple. If you are a super user, what was the number? It was like 36 gigabytes a month. There was some huge number. If you use more than that, we may have to slow you down a little.
Well, you also have to pay extra if you tether to your, you know, iPhone or anything
tethering.
Like that.
And your video is going to be 480p. Period.
That's the big
unless you pay for $25 extra a month for high def.
I think I have a grandfather plan. I'm so this is prepaid. I pay month to month.
You have the $30 plan.
I have $30.
Yeah, I do too.
That's that 100-minute voice plan.
100-minute voice plan, 5 gigabytes of high speed.
It's only pay as you go, and you have to search for it. It's in fine print at the bottom of the GoPhone page. But you have that too?
Mm-hmm, I have it too.
It's a good idea.
Works really well.
Will you be grandfathered in, do you know?
Well, I was told that if I switched off of it, I wouldn't necessarily be able to switch back. So I think they want to get rid of it.
Stick with it. Yeah, of course.
And they're not legally bound to keep giving me that price because it is month to month. They could just say, we don't have this anymore. But I like it.
26 gigs of data. The top 3% of its subscribers who use more than 26 gigs of data a month will see some throttling. So it's unlimited up to...
That would explain why mine is so, I guess so.
26 gigs, what are you doing?
I have to admit.
It's a gig a day.
I don't know if it was accurate or not. There was one point where I looked at my phone, and I looked at the phone, and I was like, it said, you've used since your last whatever. It was like 90 gigs of trend. And I was like, I don't even know how that's even possible. Like, I didn't, you know, and I was probably updating my phone and
something.
A bunch of other stuff.
Mine's YouTube. This is not my YouTube.
But you can't use a gig a day on YouTube, could you?
Remember,
you'd also have to be outside a Wi-Fi range.
I spend 2 to 2.5 hours in the car driving to and from the studio every day.
Watching YouTube?
Yeah.
Well, no, listening. Listening to music.
Background play, right?
So my current on my phone, my current period is 17 days, and my current period cellular usage is 64.8 gigs.
Wow.
So I guess I'm in.
You win.
Who's your carrier?
AT&T. I'm in the old. I have an AT&T and a T-Mobile.
You have the grandfathered unlimited?
Uh-huh.
You're the reason AT&T is going out of business.
Holy cow. How many Alexes is that?
What happens is you get, I'm like, I'll be downloading something and the Wi-Fi gets slow and I turn on LTE and then it works fine. You know, like, and I'm having trouble with like my messages aren't coming through or whatever. But
you're right. It's often faster to use LTE than it is to use the landline.
And you know what I think a lot of it is also is I take a lot of photos, you know, and I think I'm.
Are you uploading everything to 15 different services?
No, I think that it doesn't upload them. Oh, but Facebook will upload them all LTE or Wi-Fi.
Right.
So I think that it's like
I would figure out what it is that's using all that bandwidth. He could do that, right? Android has that.
I know
iOS does, where you can see how much bandwidth each app is using.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, let's take a break, and we can wrap up with Gawker.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Yep. Just like Gawker got wrapped up, we'll wrap up with Gawker.
Aww.
Our show today brought to you by Braintree. If you're a mobile app developer, you know that having payments in your app is key. But can I suggest that you don't want to write it yourself? I know you don't want to. Maybe you feel, I can do it, but don't. It's fraught with peril. A shopping cart that loses people money is going to be a big problem. Of course, you've got to have the confidence of your users. And 70% of mobile shopping carts get abandoned. And that's probably because users are looking at them going, I don't know if I trust this. You want to use Braintree. It makes it easy for you. It gives you every kind of payment, period. Bitcoin, Apple Pay, Android Pay, Venmo, credit cards, PayPal. And if something new comes along, they do the work to integrate it. You just check a box in your control panel and bada bing, bada boom. No late nights, no complicated recoding. It's all working. You don't have to stress at all. Braintree Payments. And may I tell you that you've used Braintree Payments? I could say that with absolute confidence. You have used it. Because you know who uses Braintree for their payment system? Uber and Lyft, Airbnb and hotels tonight. GitHub uses Braintree. It is the payment system. When everybody uses it, you know this is the right way to go. Check it out. It works in iOS and Android and JavaScript. It's got seven languages. The SDKs come in .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, and Ruby. It's easy code. The integration's just a few lines. You can do it in a heartbeat. And your first $50,000 in payments are fee-free. If you're a mobile app developer or you want to have a shopping cart on your website and you want to do it right, go to Braintree, braintreepayments.com/twit, braintreepayments.com/twit. Do we want to say, do we want to do a eulogy for Gawker? Do we want to be sad about Gawker?
Wait, where's the
should we say,
there's champagne around here.
Should we say, what do they say on Battlestar Galactica?
So say we all.
Yeah.
I thought it was
screw
be,
you.
Oh, no. I thought it was going to be like,
So say we all.
Ding,
I am not conflicted about this at all. I probably should.
Should I be conflicted? I want to be conflicted, but I'm really not.
No,
you should
I'm not.
Be conflicted.
I should.
I mean, I don't know. I think that Gawker was mean and petty, and yes. I think they went about. They weren't that smart with a lot of the stuff they did, and yet they uncovered a lot of big stories that a lot of journalists are afraid to cover, like you know things about Mark Zuckerberg, you know his house, things about you know.
Do we really need to know about Mark Zuckerberg's house?
Well, like the not. I mean, I'm not. When he bought all the houses around him
yeah.
because
it's
he wanted
story.
Privacy
yeah.
when, you know, he doesn't want the rest of the people to have privacy, like those kinds of things. I think there was
it's
room
gossip.
For that. Yes, it was gossip, but there's room for that. The people in power need to be checked. They just do, I think. But yeah. I think there are other places for that. I mean, we talked about this on Friday. I think satire is a really good place for that. Like, that's what The Daily Show did. Perfect.
Right.
We need a tech Daily Show.
Nobody says, oh, The Daily Show, I can't wait till they stop bot. They were great, right? They were
yes.
beloved.
Yeah, yeah, like a Stephen Colbert. That's what we need.
Yeah.
That's what we need because and that's sort of what Silicon Valley, the HBO show is a little bit. Like
right.
that's what we have. Like you know who they're talking about. You know who they're making fun of. But they're not mean. They're not outing anyone. You know they're not doing those things. And they're protected. Like you know they're protected satire.
Well, and Gawker's protected. Frankly, Gawker's protected by free speech. But you're not protected against a lawful lawsuit
mm-hmm.
by somebody whose free speech, you know, whose privacy you violated. And if the courts decided against you, you lost in court. That's what happens. That's the checks and balances on this. I don't think it's anti-free speech. Admittedly, having Peter Thiel fund it doesn't – the optics aren't good.
That's the thing. I mean, like if Thiel went
yeah, but all,
to the
but
New
he
York
didn't
Times,
do anything illegal.
He didn't. But, I mean, if it was billionaire funds lawsuit to take out the Wall Street Journal.
Then you have to trust the courts to do the right thing. In other words,
I mean, I think
Hulk Hogan and Peter Thiel used the – legal system appropriately, I believe, and the fact that Gawker lost is sufficient. Now, you can, of course, use your money to harass somebody yes. and tie them up in court, even though there's no merit to it, and that would be wrong. I don't think that's what happened here. I do think Gawker crossed the line many times, and so for that reason, I think they're appropriately being chastened. But
well,
I agree with you, Megan. We do need people to speak truth to power. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't cross the line.
Right.
You don't need to out, you know, editors at Condé Nast who aren't public figures. You don't need to do that.
No.
And you, I think they went too far.
And I think that going too far puts you into a position where people are willing to spend a lot of money on
yes.
somebody else's
mm-hmm.
court case.
Yes.
You know, I think that that is...
I think Peter Thiel had a legit beef against them, frankly.
I think he did. And I think that...
Sounds like it.
I think more... The average person just doesn't have the power. I mean, people are upset because the average person doesn't have the power to properly defend themselves in court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the
well,
reality is,
well.
Is that, you know, that Hulk Hogan, you know, couldn't afford to go,
right.
to go, you know, even with whatever his
his mansion is or whatever. He could never afford to have those.
There's
kind
a lot
of
people
that.
Who would have loved to sue Gawker and probably could have won a lawsuit against Gawker for right. defamation, but didn't because Gawker had lawyers on retainer and they did not and they weren't willing to undergo that.
Right. And that deep pocket is what's required sometimes right. to push a lot of this stuff down the path.
They also use shame. You know, they use shame so people are not going to sue because then, oh, well, then it just becomes a bigger deal. Like, that's
effect.
What they use mm-hmm. that, yeah. and I can't stand that. So, yeah. yeah, I mean, I think, but it's a scary world in journalism right now. I mean, Bezos owns the Washington Post. You know, all these companies, you know, AOL owns TechCrunch, and, you know, BuzzFeed is supported by venture capital. Like, we're in a world where you don't know who owns who in tech journalism. It's a scary world to be in. We're, you know, we say what we want, but we, you know, we're not beholden to anyone, and that's nice. But if we were ginormous, we might not be able to do that anymore.
Right. But I think the other thing, though, is that...
Or if Peter Thiel decided he didn't like us for whatever reason, that would be scary. I couldn't mm-hmm. defend against
well, that's,
the lawsuit.
That's the big challenge, right? And that's where the lines get really blurry. Like, say you want to start a new media outfit, you're less inclined, at least on the surface, you're less inclined to trust your instinct that this is worth covering and this is not, because... At least in the example of Gawker and Thiel, there is a world that exists where this man with a lot of money can decide that he doesn't like yeah. the line that you've drawn.
That's scary.
And that's yeah. a chilling effect right yeah. there for any new publication or existing publications. And I think that's where the confliction kind of comes from.
Yeah.
It's like, we kind of get it. You know, you look at Gawker's content, you look at a lot of the stuff that they did, and you might not like it, but when it comes down to it, some guy with a lot of money decided he didn't like them. And that he and didn't like the brand of media and coverage that they were doing,
right.
and decided to put his money into taking them out of existence. And how, you know, is it too much to believe that that couldn't also happen to this media company or that media company yeah. simply for reporting the things that
I'm
they
conflicted.
Think are important?
I have feelings on both sides of the equation. Yeah. I don't know what the right answer is.
I absolutely wanted Gawker to die.
I did too.
But it does sound like this is a huge chilling effect. Yeah. Jason's you know right on yeah. of the whole. Well, what happens when they go after an outlet that you like?
Right.
Is now it's bad where before it wasn't?
Well, and you know, funding other people's lawsuits to for your own thing is not something new or even no. original or even interesting. I mean, it is something that happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, you get someone and now it happened to happen to Gawker, but it you know, in local politics, this kind of stuff happens all the time. You know, somebody comes in and you start, you know.
You have to trust the court system and maybe give tools, maybe like a slap tools where there you can, if you lose a decision, if it was harassment, then you get punished for that. There need to be some solutions. So
oh, absolutely. Well,
your father's
a prosecutor. If you lose a case, the next there's going to be a countersuit for all the legal fees.
Right.
And so that's kind of a known, you know, right. danger that you're going down that path.
That's an appropriate dampening. Yeah. In Canada, they have slap laws where if you lose a suit, you're liable for the legal costs. And that's really reduced kind of frivolous lawsuits.
Well, and I think that
you want to make it easy to sue. For real reasons, you don't want frivolous lawsuits that are designed just to tie a company up.
Well, but and at the same time, those what's at stake has to be high enough that the media company is going to pay attention to it. I mean,
right.
if you look at a lot of the stuff the National Enquirer or other people post, they just post whatever they want to.
Because they know nobody's going to sue them.
Well, or if they sue them, that even if they win, they made the calculation of, oh, I'll have to get paid. You know,
right.
And so what this has also shown is that if you're going to start putting out a bunch of stuff like that and breaking privacy rules, breaking all these other things, we're going to actually, you know, I wouldn't feel that bad if someone
right.
took the National Enquirer out because they were, you know, breaking people's
It
privacy.
Wouldn't be a loss to the national dialogue, as I don't think the loss of Gawker is a particular loss.
I mean, you look at these, you look at
By
stars.
The way, the Jalopnik and Gizmodo and some of the other
Jezebel.
Gawker properties, Jezebel, will continue under the new owner, Univision. But Gawker itself, that site is shut down.
And I think the Gawker writers who haven't left yet are going to be spread around.
Yeah. And I would love to see, you know, a chilling effect on paparazzi. You know, I'd love to have them feel like you know, they're going to, you know.
But I will watch TMZ whenever it's on. I love that stuff.
That's the problem.
Don't you love TMZ?
I have never watched TMZ.
Oh, it's great. Harvey Levine. Oh, I love it. It's just so good. It's... TMZ has style, just like The Daily Show has style, right?
Sort of.
Hey, this has been a lot of fun, but I think we got a party to go to. I am really thrilled with how this worked. Thank you so much to our team. They stayed up all night wiring and getting this all working, and they did a fabulous job. We really appreciate it. Thanks to my team here at the table, the greatest Megan Maroney. It's such a thrill to be able to continue to work with you after all this time and keep making great stuff. We'll see you on tomorrow for iOS Today and, of course, Monday through Friday for TNT. Father Robert Ballasier, the digital Jesuit. He's on loan from God, but we're glad to have him. And I don't know. If God ever wants you back.
I'm on a mission from God.
We're on a mission from God. This Week in Enterprise Tech, know-how. Am I missing anything?
Just the live events.
And yeah. Great job, by the way, at IDF last week.
That was fun.
At DEF CON. Where are you going next? What's the next live event? Are you going to IFA?
We're going to Berlin. Twit will be at IFA covering 3 days of the show.
That's exciting. When's that? How soon is that?
That's, in a week and a half.
Wow. And you're taking Brian Burnett?
Brian Burnett and Colleen.
Brian Burnett was going to be on this table. He's also one of our hosts, but he very kindly agreed to bow out because this apparently when they designed the table, they said, Leo, who's the most number of people you would ever want to have on this show? And I said, we would never want more than 5 people on this show. And, of course, the very first show we do here, I wanted to have 6 people. And John said, you said 5. So, Brian, thank you. We love you, Brian. We'll get you on a Twit real soon. Thanks also to Alex Lindsay. Appreciate the 360 degree. That's awesome.
It's a wonderful gift. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll keep that. I hope people watch it.
No problem.
It's going to be on YouTube permanently, right? So people can go back and look at it. It's right.
Yeah,
it's
YouTube Live. And then we'll also take some of the footage, and I don't know if we'll do the whole show, but we'll do an example that's in 4K stereo, and you know,
right.
That still takes a little time to put out.
But people who are watching it were thrilled. They really it was fun for them to take a look around and see it. So we'll do some sort of 360 something.
Yeah, we're still figuring it out. Like, so a lot of it is we just like to figure out, put it in places and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know.
It's really interesting. Yeah. And, of course, my good friend Jason Howell, always a pleasure to have you, host of TNT and All About Android. Thanks to all the people who came out today. It's been really great. Thanks to all of you at home who've put up with the disruption. I hope it hasn't been too bad. We plan on continuing all of our shows from our new East Side studios. You can come and watch us. Email tickets at twit.tv. Watch live 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC every Sunday afternoon. Or get your show on demand, audio and video of all of our shows available at our website, twit.tv, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe and make sure you get every single episode. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. Another Twit, I'll say it one more time, is in the can. Yeah.
Thank you.
This is amazing.
Thank you.